Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yes, and welcome to our very special bird. This is our third World's Greatest Doctors panel. We've got a few folks on the line. Judy Mikovits is on the line. Jim Thorpe's on the line. John Collins on the line. We're still waiting for two more of our team. I think Dr. Brian Artis is going to join us in about half an hour. We've got Dr. Ben Marble. Hopefully he'll be joining us soon. We've got Captain Tom Peters is going to be on the show. We've got Dr. Molly James is going to be on the show. Dr. Deborah Biglione is going to be on the show. Someone else just checked in while I'm talking. So let me see. There's Captain Stewart. So he's on the show now, too. And so just to get y'all inspired, I had this piece of music that I uploaded, and I wasn't sure why. I figured sometime I'd be able to use it. But this ought to get you in gear. Even though we deal with deadly serious topics, I like to have a little fun, too, just kind of lighten things up. So we have our captain of the team, Dr. Judy Mikovits, is here. We've got Jim Thorpe, John Cullen, Captain Tom Stewart. And, of course, as we already started now, the tradition is the ringing of the Wuhan gong to bring us all to order. There we go. Hey, you know what? That's kind of quiet. I think I'm going to turn down my 18th overture just a little bit. So let's get things going. One more thing to do, and then we'll get going here. I got to welcome our new guest. Let's give him my traditional guest of the day. As soon as I find it here, I'm scrolling. I get to produce this as well. Our guest of the day, Captain Tom Stewart. Now, Captain Tom and I have never talked. He's new to the show here. It's his first time on Action Radio. He's got a story that I've heard, some of which before. There's a whole bunch of folks in the military in this position where they don't want to take a COVID jab and take a dangerous snake oil experimental DNA modification for no reason. I mean, these are the folks that have sworn, an oath to the Constitution. They're willing to give their life for the country, but they're not willing to give their life for no reason. And so I think that pretty much sums up, at least I hope so. We'll find out in a minute. Captain Stewart, well, I'm just going to call you Tom. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, since everybody here has a title, I tend to use first names, otherwise it gets confusing. I mean, except me. I'm just like, I'm the host here. But you guys have these wonderful doctors and doctorates and all kinds of things like that. Sir, Tom, let's just let you tell your story, first of all, and then we're going to have the panel ask you questions. You can ask them questions. And again, this is very much of a free-flowing discussion. We got plenty of time. We've got the next 3 hours, and hopefully you can stay for all of it. And as we go through all these different issues. So, sir. What's your story? Take all the time you want.
So bottom line up front, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Department of Defense or the Marine Corps. If they were doing the right things, I would not be on your show today.
Mm-hmm.
But started out, was an instructor at Whiting Field since June 2019. Spent a lot of money training myself and the other instructor that was grounded at currently down at NAS Pensacola to train these warfighters to fly helicopters. Myself, along with another instructor and 11 other Marines, were grounded early September. My last fly day was the 10th. Flew three flights that day and pretty much left it on the field. I came in on the 13th, was getting ready to go fly at about 4 o'clock that afternoon, and I was called by the Training Wing 5 at NAS Whiting Field, Senior Marine, telling me I was being pulled off the schedule. I was either to get the COVID shot or basically be charged with an Article 92 unless I was submitting a religious accommodation or a medical exemption.
What's an Article 92?
I pursued both routes. Obviously, we know now the Department of Defense is denying every single religious accommodation that's coming their way. The Marine Corps has approved some, and the ones that they have approved are for Marines that are retiring, going out the door, already on terminal leave, stuff like that. So we've been grounded since that week, September. Students were also pulled from the from their training. Three out of four were midway through their helicopter syllabus. They'd all be wearing wings right now if this thing was not mandated. The one that was flying a T-6s, Naval Academy graduate, they are pushing charges on him, and they will administratively separate them. Anyone under 6 years does not have to go to a board. The guys that have greater than 6 years of service will go through an administrative separation board. The guys that are left are two captains. One is a former tank driver. He used to drive tanks. General Berger, our commandant, has done away with tanks and divested of a couple other things I'll get into in a bit.
Wait. And, yeah, I want to talk. There's a lot of things. I'm taking notes like crazy, so we're going to be busy. Glad you gave me around for a while. We lost our tanks? Oh, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Seven tank companies, Greg. We have gotten rid of seven tank companies. And the way we fight as a Marine Corps, we fight as a Marine Air Ground Task Force, and you grow up before you deploy and you train with those units. The Commandant thinks that, you know, we're just going to get the Army to support us. I can tell you right now, as being on multiple staffs and being a guy who requires certain support, whether it's air support, ground support, there's a lot of links you got to jump through in the chain to get that support. But if you've worked with someone, you've trained with someone over the years, it's much easier to work with those people while you're deployed. And it makes a huge difference. And one of the things I saw experiencing when I was on the island of Hawaii, when I was stationed with guys in Hawaii, I'd work with those guys before, and then I would deploy somewhere with those guys, whether it was Big Island or Australia, you already had a rapport with them, and you knew how to get stuff done. And seven tank companies were losing, and one of the Marines here will be administratively separated. And quite frankly, he should have been put through a syllabus and flying jets. My personal opinion is he's a pretty sharp guy. Also served on a general staff, was a general's aide at some point. So he definitely knows how to fight at the tactical level of warfare and operational as well.
Wow. Let me get the first question. What's an Article 92? You mentioned that earlier.
Failure to disobey a lawful order. And right now, this whole mandate, they've said you have to have fully authorized, fully approved by the FDA vaccines. Comirnaty is the one they're referring to. That has not even been manufactured to this day.
Oh, yeah, we know.
There is an email.
You got a bright panel here. We know about that. So it says failure to obey a lawful order. That's what an Article 92 is?
Yes, and this is an unlawful order, and it's already been determined an unlawful order by three administrative separation boards that have been conducted.
Okay, slow down just a little bit here. You remind me of me, and I thought I talked fast. So this is one of the big things, because my question has always been, if it's on you to determine that you can make a choice to disobey an unlawful order, then who says this is a lawful order? It sounds like the government said you can't disobey this because it's a lawful order. We've determined it. Well, the people that are issuing the orders can't determine if it's lawful or not. That's the whole purpose of having you decide yourself that 99.99% of the orders are lawful and you comply. But all of a sudden you get this one and it's not. They can't tell you it is lawful. Isn't that part of the problem?
That is part of the problem. They put that in some of the Navy admins that have come out, the DOD, the Secretary of Defense's letter. That this is a lawful order, but some of these orders have been worded that have came down to Marines at the lowest level. The first sentence says this is a lawful order. And quite frankly, as a Marine officer who's been trained to critically think, that would raise my eyebrows right there before I read the rest of it.
Well, first of all, if it's lawful, you don't have to say so. You don't have to say it's a lawful order. It should be plainly obvious.
Yeah. Well, one thing I will point out is the people that are saying it's a lawful order up in the Pentagon, the head guys, still have not divested themselves of their stock options, like they said they were in their Senate confirmation hearings, and they were confirmed.
Hold on. Pentagon. Wait a minute. I want to get this down. Pentagon, they have stock options in Pfizer, other big pharmaceuticals?
Secretary of Defense, that is correct. And that was identified in the lawsuit filed, I believe it was last month. I'm trying to find the exact date. Yeah, 23 June is when the lawsuit was filed by Dale Sarin. And, yeah, this one is another one against the Secretary of Defense. By the way, he has 28, we have 28 lawsuits fighting this mandate representing military members right now. And this is just one of them. More or more coming down the road. Yes, the Secretary of Defense
Monday.
Is not divesting himself of stock options with the Pfizer and the vaccine companies. And that was identified in the filing of this lawsuit.
Yeah, I'm going to ask John Cullen about that. I'm sure he's got some data on it. We had Jordan Carr, who is Air Force captain, worked in intelligence. She's running for Florida House of Representatives. She was on Monday. So if you guys aren't in touch, I'm sure you will be soon. All right, let's go to the panel. And the first time you speak on the show today, let's get an introduction so the folks, our new people that are listening, will know who you are. So Judy, why don't you kick things off, and if you have some questions or comments for Tom.
Good morning. I'm Judy Mikovits. I'm a PhD biochemist, molecular biologist. I wrote the books Plague of Corruption, upon which the movie PlandemicSeries.com is based. It shows all of this is a plandemic, basically has been for 40 years. Our last book is called Ending Plague, A Scholar's Obligation in an Age of Corruption. And that's what we're here on this phone with scholars trying to forever end these kinds of things. And we have a long uphill battle, for Tom. Just, we all know this. There's no FDA-approved, the Comirnaty, nothing else available. We all know that. And yet the band plays on, and they just continue this. You know, there's nothing lawful about any of it. And it's hard to believe. I met Tom, I believe, when I was in Gulf Breeze a few weeks ago. So it's just tough to see these skillful people. I mean, I'm thanking God that they're standing strong, because we're going to need to have a fighting force that's capable of fighting, because we know how many deaths, from Edward Dowd's work, 61,000 millennials were killed by the shot so far in a year. And that's, more or less the number that were killed in the entire Vietnam War. So this is a war literally against, from the inside, destroying our military. And we're standing with them the best we can.
What was that number you just gave? Did you
61,000. That was Edward Dowd reported.
I thought
that.
You said million for a minute. Yeah, that's what I want to make sure.
No, 61,000.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah,
all right.
We're killed. Yep.
And what
millennials
was that from?
Alone.
And that was millennials. Is this from the COVID jab or from something else?
From the COVID jab.
Okay.
The COVID jab is the disease. When you inject that, you've injected a bioweapon that was weaponized to humans. The SARS-CoV-2 virus, as everyone knows, did not kill that many people, only the most vulnerable. And so the vaccine is a bioweapon, never was a vaccine. And it was optimized to evade the human innate immune response, which would be an effective response, so people wouldn't even get sick. There's no such thing as asymptomatic carriers. That's a healthy person. So this is a bioweapon intended to kill, and it's accomplishing its goals.
Wow. Tom, do you have questions or comments? Feel free. And you guys can exchange with each other. You don't need me to call on you.
Well, Judy, some other figures I'll throw in there right now. The day I was grounded, there were 559,000 adverse reactions. And I know most programs get shut down after about 50 deaths is what I read this morning. They don't let it get nearly this bad. Today, we're up to 2,161,981 adverse reactions. Right now, as far as the service members holding out, I'm going to pull that exact figure for you. But right now we're up to about 135,000 unvaccinated service members. And 135,000 people it's a big number. That's some strength. 136,490 service members that are unvaccinated and fighting this mandate. And you bring up the figure of 61,000, that's pretty much almost half of that.
Right.
If you want to put two together.
So these are just military numbers? You're talking about 2 million adverse reactions just in the military?
No, this is OpenVAERS is what I'm citing.
Okay.
2,161,981 is OpenVAERS. That's the total number of adverse reactions listed as of this morning. The 136,490 service members, that is both active duty and the reserve force that remains unvaccinated and is holding the line against this thing.
And the 701,000?
Yeah, the 701,559 was the Open Bears reporting on the week I was grounded. And that's something I brought to my chain of command. It was dismissed, put it in an email, did it in person. And I tell you what, something I was going to allude to later, they got Louisiana schools now are saying you have to be vaccinated with this vaccine, 16 and up. So I'm waiting for the lawsuits to pop in Louisiana. And, you know, they're also trying to open up, might be jumping a little ahead in your show here, the COVID vaccination for children on the 21st of June. So, you know, for five and under. So when does this stop? Someone's got to fight it.
Well, they're like serial killers. We have to stop them. I mean, that's pretty simple. I'm going to go through, and Judy, I'm sure you're going to have more to say, so we're going to get to that. Thank you. Dr. Jim Thorpe. Jim.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me back on your show.
You're welcome. Interim, sign in, please. Let's get your specialty and for the new folks.
Yeah. So, Jim Thorpe, I'm a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist, also board-certified maternal fetal medicine physician. I've been practicing high-risk obstetrics for 42-plus years, and I view that as my calling in this life, as well as to fight this horrible disaster, the greatest disaster in the history of medicine, which we are being subjected to at this point in time. I've published extensively, 175, 180, somewhere around there, publications. I've served as a formal reviewer for many of the major medical journals. I have been board of directors for the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine. I've been an examiner for the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
He knows what he's doing, is what he's saying. He really knows what he's doing. I'm just teasing you, Jim. Not to make
my
qualification.
Time is twofold. Number one, I abhor and I am offended. I am shocked that within 1 month of September of 2021, all of the NGOs, all of the private institutions, all of the universities, all of the healthcare system came down with the exact same worded threat. If you spread COVID misinformation, we will remove your license and your board certification. I've never seen anything like that. So I will fight that to my death. And then the other focus of mine is we have broken the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Every other major health institution has broken God's golden rule of pregnancy, which he ingrained within every human being for all of humanity. You never, ever, ever use a new substance in pregnancy, be it a vaccine, a drug, a procedure, or a substance. You never, ever do that. So, That's basically what I'm focused on. Captain Tom, and also a shout out to Captain Carr, my brothers and sisters in the military, I support you. I stand with you. I'm former Air Force. I honor you. I wanted to ask you a question, Tom, if I may. So no segue for this, but you mentioned that the Commandant did away with the tank divisions, and I know this is a little bit off course here, but what do you think that could be a wise decision given the lack of effectiveness of a tank with the modern-day weapons and maybe extend that to an aircraft carrier with the hypersonic missiles that can take out an aircraft carrier, you know, that as best I can tell is unpreventable? Is that something that might not be a bad idea? Could you comment on that?
I think we need tanks. I think we never should have gotten rid of them. They're an awesome vehicle. Also have armor-piercing rounds that could take out other tanks. But very useful. Helps the ground guys on the ground maneuver in and out of cities. They're very useful in Iraq. You don't always have close air support available, but a tank can open up a lot of doors for you. And if you have an issue with the building, they can also level the building for you. But yeah, I think it's a terrible idea to get rid of them. And I completely disagree with the decision to just do away with them completely and then use another service's assets for support, especially a service you haven't regularly trained with.
Yeah, and anybody can ask any question. We're not limited in topics here. In fact, that's what makes this show so fun and interesting is that the spontaneous nature is that we can get off, you know, and discuss COVID vaccines, licenses being pulled, and tanks all in the same conversation, which because everything's interrelated. I mean, everything, you know, comes in contact with everything else. And a lot of us, you know, are getting to know each other. We're becoming sort of like this one big, happy activist family. It's really quite interesting as we cross military and medical and different political and different areas that that we're all coming to. So the tank thing is quite interesting. Jim mentioned aircraft carriers. I've talked about that with Dr. Peter Pry, who does our national security report. He's an EMP nuclear weapons expert, and he's on Tuesdays. And we've talked about aircraft carriers being vulnerable. Tanks, though, seem different because there's a lot more of them, and they're a lot smaller, whereas an aircraft carrier is one big target sitting out, you know, in the middle of the ocean. And hypersonics and satellites, I mean, you can see them, you know, pretty easily. So if not the tank, what? What are they going to do to replace it?
Well, right now, per the Force Design Plan 2030, they're going to do nothing to replacement. You control F the word divest in General Berger's plan. Divestment pops up 20 times, and that is the opposite of investment. That is not building our military. He's also doing away with infantry battalions at the same time, three of them. But, yeah, the seven tank companies stationed all over the on East Coast and West Coast, I really don't think that helps our cause.
Yeah.
Losing TAC helicopter squadrons, or three CH-53 Echo squadrons. That's your heavy lift helicopter, and then two attack helicopter squadrons, which basically will provide close air support to the guys on the ground, and we're going to do away with two of those. There's only going to be one left on the East Coast, and one of the ones that I had the privilege of serving with, 367, HMLA 367 is also going away soon. Wad them up and turn them into water.
And plus a surrender of $80 billion worth of weapons in Afghanistan. I got a Jim Thorpe question for you. Something the data you mentioned, I heard you on another podcast. The infertility rate among women in the military because of this jab is skyrocketing, plus all kinds of other problems, birth defects and everything else. Am I right on that?
Yes, you're right. It has skyrocketed, and that is from the DMED stats that Lieutenant Colonel Long cited on Ron Johnson's panel, and yes. And what I will get into with that is when I was going to get my flight waiver out at Whiting Field, there was some females showing up that day, basically asking the surgeons, the flight docs, how do they freeze their eggs? Now, I can't imagine being in their shoes. You're trying to serve and do your time in the military, then maybe start a family, but I tell you what, just that aspect itself made me very sick to my stomach on September 9th when I was talking to my flight doc, getting a flight waiver signed, and have these people try and sell me to take the vaccine with Pfizer and Moderna stuff written all over the paperwork.
Wow. Can you copy that and send it to us? Can you post that? I mean, I'm interested to see if it's unclassified, if it's possible to see Pfizer and Moderna, you know, stamps all over military paperwork. That would be very interesting for us.
Yeah, well, the thing is, he did not have a compiled like document that he authored himself. And if you're going to try and sell commanders and, you know, students and instructor pilots, the first thing we briefed is operational resource management on taking the shot. There was nothing he compiled. It was seven pages of stuff and page protectors laminated. It was like, here's this order, here's that order. And then you're looking at the stats on the shot. And it was, I did not buy what he was selling, and I still don't to this day.
Well, let me ask you a nasty question then. Is Pfizer writing military procedures and orders?
They're not, but they're being cited, the whole safe and effective thing. So when you go on a website and you just want to inquire about COVID vaccines on the Department of Defense Medical websites, you are sent to a website that says, these are the vaccines we have. There's Pfizer, there's Moderna, here's the risk associated with them. But bottom line, the first thing they put there is how safe and effective they are, and you should just go take them. But they don't show you the DMED stats that were pulled in regards to these and sent to Senator Ron Johnson's panel. But yeah, you can log into any TRICARE website, any military medical website, and they're going to take you to a frequently asked questions things, and it's all going to be stuff you would pull off of Pfizer or Moderna document that they've thrown on the websites.
The Government Corporate Fascist Alliance for Profit and Death. John Cullen. John, enter and sign in, please.
Hi there. Captain Stewart, thank you for your service. Great to have you here on the show.
Thank you.
My background, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physician or a PhD. My background is in data, and I spent my career in IT, in high tech. And 34 years ago, when I was working at Oracle, I was one of the pioneers of geographic information systems. And so the map that you may have seen on TV that represents the outbreak is built on technology that I pioneered 34 years ago called geographic information systems. And back in March of 2020, when I saw this map coming out of Johns Hopkins, it's based on my software, I recognized that there weren't 10 people dead in Beijing, and there weren't 10 people dead in Shanghai, and there weren't 10 people dead in Hong Kong, and there was no one dead in neighboring Vietnam. And I started publishing videos about this on YouTube, and just a few weeks later, I was put in touch with Laura Ingraham from Fox News privately behind the scenes. And she was fascinated by my findings, and I started to share information with her. So my specialty is quantitative analysis, root cause analysis. And because of the ad hominem attacks that Dr. Thorpe talked about before, where they started going after everybody's licenses, when I started to publish, I do it using a pseudonym, using a nom de plume, in order to avoid having whatever credentials I've earned revoked because of my publication. So I publish under a nom de plume, and I'm incognito, because everybody else, it seems like the FBI came to Dr. Judy's house, and Dr. Simone Gold's house, for that matter, right? So I'd rather avoid that type of event. I have young children. So
they arrested me a decade ago. They arrested me a decade ago with political arrest, as we're now learning. Yeah, 2011, November 18th, and silenced it ever since. We've been sounding this alarm for more than a decade. We tried.
Yeah, so
it's the price you pay for this. You know, I haven't ever been arrested. I haven't, you know, but I've been censored for 2 years. My price is minimal compared to you folks. You know, Tom's lost his career, and Judy's been arrested, and you know, other horrible things like that. So, you know, there, doing the right thing has a cost, unfortunately. You know, and the people that are doing the evil, you know, until we stop them, have all the successes, and that just seems to be the way it is. But if you're willing to accept the cost, then it's just part of doing the right thing. John, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think it was Dr. Aaron Curiati that was addressing it in Senator Ron Johnson's hearing and was saying that just about every doctor that was in that hearing has had their credentials threatened, that you're going to lose your ability to practice medicine because of an opinion about ivermectin or an opinion about hydroxychloroquine. I mean, these are FDA-approved therapeutics. And so I think everybody was sort of dumbfounded by this, that their license to practice medicine was being threatened. Dr. Scott Jensen, who's running for governor in Minnesota, same thing. I think they threatened him 5 times that they were going to take his license away. So that's the reason that I publish with a nom de plume. You're not going to do that to me. You're not going to bully me and threaten me because my data is something that doesn't agree with your narrative. There aren't 10 people dead today in Beijing, according to Johns Hopkins. So either Johns Hopkins is publishing disinformation or they're not. It's A or B.
Well, here's a question.
They use early treatments that were banned from using because they needed the emergency use authorization to get the jab? And that's what's behind all this illegality and doctor license pulling. Yeah. Do they use hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other things in China?
Well, that's a whole discussion that we should be having. I think the more interesting question is
the question.
I'm fascinated by, wait a second, if it's true, in other words, so Captain Stewart, I don't know if you're aware of this, but according to Johns Hopkins and according to the WHO, there aren't 10 people dead in Beijing. And according to both of them, there aren't 600 dead in Shanghai. Most of the deaths are in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Altogether, China has fewer people dead than Pennsylvania. Fewer dead than New Jersey. So how does that happen? Right? If this entire pandemic was based on
population?
Well, we're talking about, in other words, when the WHO declared a global pandemic, when Dr. Tedros declared a global pandemic, the fundamental premise that I think most of us were operating on was because of what was happening in China. But if there's fewer people dead in China than North Carolina today from COVID, and there still aren't 10 dead in Beijing, was the fundamental premise flawed? In other words, do you declare a global pandemic when there aren't 10 dead in Shanghai, when there aren't 10 dead in Beijing, there's not 10 dead in Hong Kong? No one was dead in Vietnam. No one, or three people were dead in Mongolia. Now, handfuls. There were 60 people dead in Thailand, and they declare a global pandemic.
What's the vaccination rate in those places?
Well, so that's when everything changed. So, and we'll get into this, but in countries like Vietnam and Thailand, so the audience may not know this, but I spent 7 years living in Thailand. I lived in Asia for 7 years. Wow. And while living in Thailand, you know, you get exposed to different cultures and different health systems. Well, the Thais and the Vietnamese had less than 100 dead for a year. And then they started their vaccination program. And today, so in other words, Vietnam, by the way, has more people than any country in Western Europe. Vietnam has about 100 million people, which is more than Germany, more than the UK. Yeah, it's a very big country, 100 million people. So with 100 million person population.
They're on our map.
In Vietnam?
So Vietnam listens to
It's a beautiful place.
Yep.
All right, so 100 million people, and they had like 100 dead, 135 dead in the country a year into the pandemic. Then they began their vaccination program, and today there's over 40,000 dead.
Oh,
so countries like Vietnam and Thailand make the case really well for the correlation between what happens when we begin to vaccinate a population that wasn't experiencing COVID in a big way. Today, if you look at Nigeria, Nigeria has fewer people dead than Rhode Island or West Virginia. How do you know, Nigeria's got 200 million people. Captain Stewart, I'm interested in you're a helicopter pilot for the Marines. Do you teach in AH-6Is or AH-64 Apaches or Blackhawks, or what kind of aircraft do you fly? And what's your favorite?
CH-53 Echoes out of Hawaii for 4.5 years. I had a blast doing that. I was a basic instructor in that, able to give some basic codes to some of the students, starting off the new co-pilots. And then I taught in the TH-57 Charlie out at Whiting Field since 2019. But yeah, my favorite by far is the CH-53. 36,000 pounds is what it can carry internally. Max weight it can carry, 6,750 with the weight on the wheels. Can carry a lot of Marines and a lot of stuff in a lot of places. It was very effective being used in Afghanistan, worked in the high, hot, and heavy environment out there. And they also did a lot of night flying out there during that time frame. But yeah, it's a great aircraft. Worked with some great people at the squadron, had some great pilots in my ready room I still keep in touch with today, and definitely miss the atmosphere of the squadron, and definitely miss the guys turning wrenches on it as well. Spent a lot of time doing functional check flights on that helicopter. So I miss it.
So for those who don't know the letter acronyms, we know like Apaches and Blackhawks and some of the other names, Chinooks, things like that. So can you put Ospreys? Can you put names to those for us?
CH-53 Echo Super Stallion.
Okay,
it's about 99.5 feet long. The rotor diameter 79 feet.
Thing's huge.
Huge.
It's made by Sikorsky, right? It's Sikorsky.
Yep, made by Sikorsky. You can fill it with 32 Marines. It carries 3 .50 caliber machine guns. Can do a lot of things. Only thing it can't do is shoot rockets. And
How many guys are in the cockpit?
Two. Minimum crew. You can have two. You have a pilot, a co-pilot, and then you have a crew chief in the back.
And it's 100 feet long. It's 100 feet tip to tip, right? 99 feet?
Yep, 99 feet from the tail to the nose.
Wow.
And it's got that refueling lance in the front, right? So it can refuel midair.
Yep, so that extends
And you're teaching kids how to fly these things.
Yeah, I taught how to fly them at the squadron, but I teach the basic helicopter stuff at Whiting Field. So basics, fundamentals, you need to know how to fly a military helicopter.
This thing is massive. I'm looking at
Whiting Field
right now.
Whiting Field's only 2 miles from me, so we're neighbors, which is kind of funny.
They probably fly over your house all the time.
Yeah.
That helicopter can fly for 3.5 hours. Typically, it holds about 15,000 pounds of gas, roughly about 2,300 gallons each time you fill the tanks up. And anytime you air refuel, you can just keep going. And they have that, use that air refuel capability typically when they're doing long range stuff, like a long range raid from point A to point B, and they need to get Marines into somewhere and out of somewhere. But yeah, that's typically when we use it.
Yeah. I got one more toy question just because it's fun. I was a flight instructor. I wanted to be in the military as a pilot. And when I soloed at 16, got my license at 17. By 19, I was wearing glasses, had 2100 vision, which kind of canceled my military flying career. Tried for the airlines, and when I got all of my ratings, they all went broke in the early 90s. So my timing's not really good. Point being that I love teaching, I love flying, and so I'm just curious. I had a sort of futuristic question as we were talking about weapon systems being decommissioned. Do you see a time when helicopters will have like multiple drones and be like a command center, where they'd launch maybe 3 drones and be commanded from that helicopter on the battlefield? Especially if we don't have tanks.
Yeah, right now I can tell you there's a handful of helicopters that can do the command suite. The Huey can do it. The UH-1 Huey is a pretty good command suite. There's a lot of radios you can install in that. We've used Ospreys as a command helicopter before and a C-130s. Typically, there's a ground force commander on board and an air mission commander kind of working that together, working through an execution checklist all at the same time.
Yeah.
But as far as getting rid of pilots and droning things out, no, I don't see that happening anytime soon because drones do not have sound judgment that people do and think it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, artificial intelligence is still artificial. I want to go through the panel again, but I have just one question, especially for pilots. Not necessarily the helicopter pilots because you're a lower level, but physiology. The fighter pilots, the bomber pilots, the air refuelers, folks that are up 30,000-plus feet. You've got what is the cabin pressure in a fighter jet? Because airliners are pressurized to about 8,000-foot cabin pressure altitude. How about the fighters? Are they more or less? And there's a reason I'm asking this question. And then go to Judy after this.
As a helicopter guy, to be quite honest with you, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but there's a regulation that says that 10,000 feet or better per one of our pubs we have, you will have oxygen 10,000 feet or greater.
Yeah, that's the commercial.
As part of the pressurization,
commercial regulation too.
I cannot tell you off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm wondering is because we know that oxygen's depleted in a regular airliner because at 8,000 feet, that's 3,000 feet above Denver. We know that masks. I mean, Judy was telling us this in great detail that masks, reduce your oxygen. So I'm thinking of a fighter pilot, up at high altitude, pulling G's with oxygen depletion. I'm not sure what they're pressurized to, even with the mask, the oxygen. I'm not sure how much they're pumping into that. It'd be interesting to find out. But if you combine that with a COVID shot, spike proteins, enlarged heart, everything else that goes on with it, you got some major medical situations there. So is there a concern? Is anybody looking at the particular physiology of pilots who've had this COVID jab? Or independent people independent of the military looking into it? And then we're going to go through the panel. And Brian's joined us also, so we'll get to him in a minute too. Anybody looking into this? Tom?
As of right now, I can tell you no, but we do have a specific branch on the Navy side. On the aeromedical side, we have aviation physiologists. That is their job, is to track this stuff, test it, and I have not seen any stats on that yet. But I can tell you right now, it's not exactly life-enhancing to take the COVID shot and then go flying at that altitude. And that's a major concern against some of my peers that are jet pilots, is single-piloted with ordnance. You know, something happens to you in the plane, whether it's a heart attack or a stroke, was kind of my biggest concern, especially flying around with the stressors at night. That's definitely been a concern amongst some of the pilots.
Well, you lost
in the DOD.
A pilot. You just had a F-18 from Naval Air Station Lemoore, which is near where I used to teach in California. Is that COVID-related possibly?
COVID-related? They'll do the investigation and figure it out, but it'll be hard to tell. But yeah, there will be an aviation mishap board set up, and they will determine the cause of it. I could not tell you off the top of my head. I haven't heard anything. So
they may never disclose it. I'm just speculating. No. You know, that plus we lost an airline passenger on a flight from Seattle to, I think, somewhere in Texas, died on the flight. There's 8,000-foot pressure altitude. We lost a football player, 38-year-old, you know, otherwise healthy football player, passed away. And then they talk about, you know, cause of death unknown, which immediately sends me to COVID. COVID shots?
Hey, Tom.
Jim, go ahead.
Jim Thorpe here. Can you comment on, and I believe it's Dr. Peter McCullough, and now don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure that's right. Maybe the other host can chime in on that. But I've heard the figure that 30% of all pilots, be it commercial, military, or otherwise, are at risk for death or major complication en route, in flight, that could potentially, you know, kill whatever, 300 passengers. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I've seen that figure as well, 30%. Most pilots are pretty healthy guys. They have to get that Class 1 medical every year, and you have to stay in top physical shape, top as healthy as you can be to keep flying. The minute your health on the Navy and the Marine Corps side starts going downhill, flight doctors have to route waivers to keep you healthy. I will say getting these shots, I do not think it's enhancing the aeromedical safety.
How can flight doctors do this? How can they do this? How can flight doctors that are sworn to uphold the health of the pilots and everybody else be giving COVID shots? What the hell's going on here? Sorry for being blunt.
I don't think it's ethical. I think they are completely violating their Hippocratic Oath. My flight doctor in particular lied to the commanding officers at Whiting Field about the available to commonality. Coerced students using the same data he tried to present to me, saying, hey, it's safe and effective. Look at this paperwork I have that I didn't even author. But, medical ethics with some of these military doctors right now is out the window. And one thing I will say, big picture, is some of these higher-ranking officers are more concerned about their pensions than they are about doing the right thing right now and taking care of their troops.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to you about that in a little bit, too, because I've got a theory about the military. This is fascinating. Judy, do you want to get back in here? I'm sure you've got some comments.
It's just as I think Jim was saying, Lee Dundas presented, I think it was January. This is an attorney, Lee Dundas, and she was representing lots of airline pilots and commercial airlines in every aspect, and presented right there on the news the injuries. And, the pilots were discussing the risk of just simply the mask in the beginning, recognizing that planes are pressurized to, I don't know, they said 7,000 to 10,000 feet. I'm not expert in that.
My understanding.
About 8,000 feet. So that's like being oxygen depleted on the top of a mountain. So what do you get? A migraine, confusion. You wear the mask and deplete your oxygen and increase CO2. In only two breaths, you're at toxic levels of CO2 and the carbon dioxide, and it's a problem. So, it's more than a big problem because, by the time if the cabin depressurizes, you know, the rest of the cabin can't get the oxygen mask on. That the particular pilot was telling me they're going to suck these things right down their throats and kill them. He was just extremely concerned. So, yeah, in the industry, hundreds, if not thousands, of pilots have already been injured by the shots and the mask, and the combination is just simply insane.
Yeah, they have 4 British Airways pilots die within a week from this. But I want to get clear what you were saying, because this is quite fascinating and scary at the same time. You're saying the masks, people are not going to have time to get the masks on?
They're not going to have time to take off the other mask, and should the cabin lose air pressure. You know, it's like, pick your favorite child if you have to put the mask on them first, on yourself first, and then them. So that oxygen mask that drops from the ceiling, when they first started this on us in September 2020, I said, I'll wear that mask, but none other. The one that drops from the ceiling with oxygen flowing, whether it inflates or not. And so you won't be able to get one off and the other on. And people are just going to suck those things down their throat because, you know, they're being lied to. And, you know, I've just been I just would never put those things on. And you know, this is the problem. There's nothing about science this doesn't have anything to do with science or medicine. Everybody knows oxygen, the ozone layer above 10,000 feet, the ozone layer. That's what protects you from radiation damage, from oxidative stress. So that's the problem in all of this. And there's nothing about this. It's scientism. It's the cult. We obey the cult of Fauci, and we get no other religion available to us, as Tom was saying, you know, a religious exemption, and those are denied. You can't deny, you know, force somebody to obey another god called Fauci or scientism and kill yourself in the United States of America. That's the whole point of any of this. It's not science, and it doesn't matter how much science you show them. They've simply rewritten the textbooks and the biochemistry. They've changed literally everything, and this is what, you know, basically I go around the world showing them. You know, we're not monkeys. We didn't evolve from monkeys, and you can't inject monkey, mouse, cow, human pieces and parts into people without destroying their brains, and you can't put a mask on and stop them from metabolism. 21.9% oxygen is what is in the atmosphere. You breathe that in and you breathe out 16% with every breath. What do you think happens to that 5%? Oh, you fuel every single thing in your body, every thought, everything you do. That's your fuel, oxygen. We're not plants. We don't do photosynthesis. You know, you don't do your own personal global warming by putting on that mask and destroying yourself.
Well, I just want to make that clear, because I did not know that if a cabin depressurizes, everybody who's wearing a mask, that's going to go right down their throats. That is a scary in itself. Now, someone wanted to speak, and then I want to get to Brian Artis, who's joined us. Who wanted to jump in there? Was that Tom? Just before Judy spoke. Once, going twice? Okay. You all got quiet on me all of a sudden. That's no fun. Let's bring in Dr. Brian Artis. Brian, enter and sign in, please. Let's get your qualifications and expertise, and then please add to the conversation.
Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Dr. Brian Artis, a retired chiropractor, acupuncturist, and nutritionist, and until recently was known as the Remdesivir guy worldwide. Anyway, how's everybody this morning?
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, come on, you guys.
Anyway, excited to join the party once again, and enjoyed listening to the concerns about the pilots. This has been a grave concern for many of us. I'm actually very close friends with Josh Yoder, who is the president and founder of the Freedom Flyers USA, who are currently with John Pierce suing like 18 different airlines right now for COVID mandates. So anyways, it's been a very, very real concern for a lot of us, and I have covered on many shows the atrocious death tolls of pilots that have not been seen or recorded previously in any 1 year, 2 years, for decades that we've seen data. It's very disturbing, very upsetting, I've also done reviews with Simone Gold as they actually filed lawsuits with AFLDS against the military for allowing pilots to fly and the request to make sure they're grounded for a certain period after getting the shots or permanently. So this has been a grave concern for a lot of us. So, and it's very disgusting. I actually had a meeting, I have to tell you, I had a meeting with a personal interview with General Mike Flynn, just as our previous national security advisor. And I said, I just have one question that I want to do an interview of and just ask you. And I see him a lot. Judy's with me at a lot of events with him. Mm-hmm. But I said, I just have one question for you that I want our audiences worldwide to have answers to. From a previous NSA perspective, what's it like to hear that 250,000 members of our military are willing to walk off with a mandated shot? I said, put that in perspective for us. What kind of concern is that for an NSA, previous NSA advisor? And he said, well, that's a grave concern because take, for example, the Marines. We only have about 350,000 total active members. That's basically the entire one branch of the four main branches of our military that would actually just walk off and leave. And, of course, as a national security advisor, that would be of grave concern. And for me, I just couldn't even fathom that amount of a loss for our military. But anyway, that was really my main concern. I want to know what impact would that have on our military presence, our defenses, because we've taken pride for a long time to protect our freedoms here in this country, and it appears that COVID, amidst everything else, it has been a disgusting attempt to ruin our military forces, defund our militaries, reduce our military load. And like he said in the interview, he goes, you know, I don't understand why they're trying to force this age group, which of our active military personnel, it's 18 to 32 years old is the average age. That age group has a 99.997% survival rate for COVID. And I said, no, they don't. And he goes, yeah, that's the number, 99.997%. I said, no, General Flynn. I said, you're talking about the 100% survivors of COVID-19 for the last 2 years. They're now saying needs to get a shot to continue surviving. It doesn't even make any sense. You're talking about children now, 2.5 years later, that you think since the pandemic started, 6-month-old, 4-year-olds, you think they all need to get these shots now come this month? The FDA is about to vote on. I said, it's disgusting to me. You're trying to convince parents and military personnel who are 100% survivors of every flipping supposed variant of COVID-19. You're going to try to convince them now that they all of a sudden need a shot to continue surviving. And we talk about that all the time. But like Judy said, I always put more faith in God's created natural immunity as far superior to the vaccinated immunity, obviously. But this has always been a grave concern. And, very upsetting to a lot of us. And I can appreciate and thank all those that are on this call that have ever served in our military to preserve our freedoms. I really appreciate all of it.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate irony. Yeah. Oh, who's got a comment? And then I'll get to it. We got Deb Viglione on the line, too. Go ahead. Who wants to make a comment?
Yeah, right now, General Berger's plan is to reduce the force by 12,000 Marines over at NAS Pensacola. Just to put it in perspective for you, 13 pilots getting pulled from training, pulled out of a cockpit, long-term is going to affect a ground force commander when he needs a total of 13 pilots to man up whatever planes are supporting him and go do and support him later. But that's what's hurting us down here. As far as the groundings go, you're talking about pilots being grounded. Yeah, long-term they're going to get grounded for health issues. But right now the Navy was passing a regulation where if you're not vaccinated, they're pulling pilots out of the planes. We also have some students down here that were denied their medical paperwork in order to fly, which we call their upchit, because they did not take the vaccine and doctors weren't sure how to approach it at Whiting Field as well. It took them a little bit to get their upchits back, but they had to go through some administrative pain to do that. And that's another point of discrimination we're facing. But yeah, like I said, they're trying to reduce the force by 2030 by 12,000 Marines. And right now they kicked out a little over 2,000. I'll get the exact number in a minute already for Senator Murphy's letter.
Yeah, this is scary. It seems to me the greatest threat to military readiness and national security is the COVID shot. You're giving it to people that don't need it. You've got perfectly healthy people, you know, have a 99, as we say, not just survival rate, but it's probably about an 80%. I didn't even know I had it rate, you know, and so this is, when I say survival, it's almost misleading. It's like everybody suffered and just barely made it through. That seems to be the connotation. Let me bring on Dr. Debra Viglione. So I want you to enter, sign in, please give your expertise and then join our conversation. We've got Captain Tom Stewart. We've got John Cullen, Jim Brian Artis, and Judy Mikovits. Debra, welcome back.
Oh, you're just getting me pissed off about this military stuff because, you know, I was military too. Yep. I mean, I'm different.
Yeah, let it out.
The guy's been there.
Let's hear it.
But I'm just, it's just
don't
horrible.
Hold back. Yeah.
What? No, don't hold back. It just, you know, I know that they're trying to weaken our defense because, you know, the globalists don't want the U.S. as part of, you know, they don't want us strong. So I think this is all, you know, more of the conspiracy stuff. You know, they're trying to weaken the U.S. You can't have us as a superpower. And, you know, this is the way they're doing it. And
I want to talk about that. No, I think you're absolutely right on. If people can mute their lines when you're not talking, we're getting a little background. I'm sorry. That's okay. No, hold on. I want to get right back to you. Yeah, but like I say, if you're not talking, you may want to just mute your line, and then it always takes a second to unmute, and that's okay. I'll certainly wait that, but that'll prevent any extra noise here. Deborah, get back. You're on a roll.
Okay, so this saw a woman in a mask in my clinic, and she said she's wearing the mask because her brother had a heart transplant, and I said, well, you realize that mask is not going to protect you or him. And then she'd had 4 shots. She has a genetic disorder that predisposes her to aneurysms. She already had a mitral valve repair. Her daughter just is in the Marine Corps and the Navy, I forget, but the flying division. And I said, I suppose she got her shots. Oh, yeah. You know, and I could not convince her. I showed her these blood clots from the Corps, you know, Dr. Hirschman, and I'm like, you are just asking to die. I said, I am trying to save your life here. I didn't get through to her. I just couldn't believe it. You know, she's
assumptions
high risk
is stronger than truth.
Anyway.
Yeah,
you know,
assumptions are stronger than truth.
All excited because she's now going to get to do some special assignment. And I'm thinking, well, let's hope she survives because she's got the same disorder. You know, I don't know. I get so angry.
We all do. That's why we're
Maverick
here, though.
Maverick
how was that?
A great movie. It was awesome. But you know, at the beginning, you know how Hollywood always says stuff? They said that the pilots were obsolete. They weren't going to need them. You know, and I'm like, oh, that's the globalist little input
heard
right
that
there.
Before.
At the very beginning, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they mention vaccines at all
never
in the movie?
Obsolete.
Well, pilots never be obsolete. No, did they mention vaccines? I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to. But did they mention vaccines in the film? Is that a part of the film at all?
No. Mm-mm.
Interesting.
They did not.
Tom, was that you who wanted to
at
jump
least,
in?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Deborah.
Naval aviators will never be obsolete.
There we go.
No. Well, that's the one thing that the movie did kind of show, you know, that it was up to the pilot. The pilot was the difference. So that part was good.
Hmm. Anybody else want to jump in? I think we can get to our free-for-all part at this point. Or, Deborah, if you have more, feel free.
No, that's all right.
Hold
I mean,
up. I have a question.
I mean, I believe the same thing. The pilots, then they, you know, I mean, you got to see it. I mean, the dogfighting was amazing. It was really, really good.
So are we talking about Top Guns?
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, Maverick.
Top Gun Maverick. Okay, so in speaking about that movie, I did see it. It was a good movie. But I have to tell you, it like was ruined for me towards the end of the movie during the dog fight. All of you who are talking about the possible conspiracy behind this impact with the military, how obvious that may be, I want y'all to pay attention if you watch Top Gun Maverick. At the end of it, he's only got bullets to shoot with his gun from his plane, and they're counting down the rounds. You can see it going down, 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 down in the cockpit. I want you to recognize when he's down to his last bit of rounds before he runs out of complete ammo, they zoom in on the bullet count. Just look at the count number. I couldn't believe it. It was even more disgusting than I thought. Just look at the number of bullets, chamber of his gun, and it's the number is significant because it's his last chance to save these people. And anyway, it's pretty disgusting. Like, pretty wild. It's pretty disappointing.
I can guess the number, but I'm not going to. Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Yep.
Brian, I always trust you with the weird details. Very good.
Go look at it. It's insane. Pay attention to that detail because it's very significant when you see it. Just watch. It's pretty wild. Uh-oh. I couldn't believe it. And then I could believe it.
Well, let's ask Captain.
Thing,
oh, go ahead, Deborah.
It wasn't realistic to me. Okay, this plane's in a hangar, and it's obviously an obsolete plane. And they steal it, and it's fully loaded. you know, like ready to go. And I thought that there's no way they would have had things loaded if it was just, you know, out to rest.
Is this the Mustang? Is this the Mustang propeller
plane? The
bone
part. Oh. Is that what the 14 is?
No.
I mean,
F-14,
they basically were acting like it was obsolete, you know, in the boneyard, and but it's fully loaded, and he takes it off, you know, takes off, and I don't think they leave him like that.
Okay. Well, let's
I don't
ask,
know if Captain Stewart be on there.
Captain Tom, are there any obvious flying mishaps? Did they, is the guns that never need reloading, are there some obvious flaws in it?
Typically, if they're going to load guns up, they're going to take to this thing called a Kayla. We take them out there in Hawaii, load ordnance, unload ordnance. Forward arming refueling points is where you load the guns. You have to load them in specific areas, load ordnance in specific areas. But I can tell you right now, like realistically, there's a lot of maintenance man hours that go into these aircraft. And just to have an aircraft in a hangar ready to go by U.S. is not very realistic. Usually it's out there on the line, pre-flighted, ready to go, but you wouldn't have an aircraft in a hangar full of bullets. But, yeah, it's another because you're getting ready to lose a lot of guys who turn wrenches on these planes out at Colbert Airfield and Eglin as a result of this mandate. So they're very
question.
Important
yeah.
keeping those planes flying.
Well, there you've got some military.
Find,
all right, Jim, go ahead.
I did find the movie incredibly well done. We went with a group of local military folk up in Pensacola, and it was really excellent. I do find it really coincidental, maybe prophetic, if you will, that southwest portion of Iran is where the major Bashar nuclear reactor is, and that's right near the coast, and that is the exact site which Israel IDF has been training for their largest military exercise ever in the history of the nation of Israel, and their operation was called Chariots of Fire, which is a biblical term for Prophet Elisha in the Old Testament. Very interesting. And then if that weren't enough, just last week, they took the topography of right off Google Earth of that entry, which is, as best I can tell, it's pretty realistic if you look at Google Earth. So they extrapolated that and then did the exact bombing run out in the Med just last week. So, of course, they loaded all of that Google Earth, you know, all of the specs that they needed to make that attack. And so I found that very, very coincidental. And by the way, you know, the IAEA has just determined that there's large amounts of non-disclosed uranium, plutonium production off-site that weren't declared by Iran. So you can bet your bottom dollar, as the Prime Minister of Israel has stated, that this operation is going to come off really, really soon.
Huh. Well, I'm not surprised. I've been waiting for, you know, as soon as the Iranian nuclear program, you know, gets active, that Israel's going to have to do something because we're not. But let me get a John Cullen question here. Do you have any military data from around the world or stats of the status of fighter pilots or armies in general or anything you're determining from, you know, COVID-vaxxed armies versus non-COVID-vaxxed armies? Is anything turning up in your studies?
No. The only thing I was aware of was, I think it was Brian that mentioned Dr. Simone Gold is involved in this lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
and it has something to do with grounding commercial pilots that have had the vaccine. And one of the reasons that maybe so many flights have been canceled is because commercial pilots who have had the vaccine are at risk of...
Why?
Right.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what that lawsuit's about.
The FAA.
Now, I do have some statistics, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do have, like, stats I can share with you. So
okay.
In the United States, Let's see. So Captain Stewart was saying, you know, the average age of these pilots and the guys that he's serving with and training in the Marines is between, I think it was 18 and 30-something.
32, if I believe.
Is that right,
Tom?
Is that right, Captain?
Yeah, 32, 18 to 32 is the average age.
All right. So here's the statistics for COVID deaths in the United States from the CDC. So one of the things that I do is I go to a system called Wonder at the CDC where they keep all the data on deaths.
Wonder?
And,
seems like an appropriate name for a CDC program.
Weird.
Sorry.
Yeah,
the irony
strange IT protocols. All right, so the system is called Wonder, and Wonder is where they keep all the death certificate data, and they keep data by age on COVID. And you can now they define the age groups, so you know you can't just come up with numbers based on what you want to know. You have to go with what the CDC is recording. But the net of this is, of all the people that died in the United States, and right now they're reporting about a million deaths. Seven percent of those people were younger than 50.
Wow.
93% of them were 50 or older.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about active duty Marine Corps and pilots, I think the question is, well, exactly how many died? And this is what we call root cause analysis. When we talk about vaccinating, inoculating people, whether it's children, whether it's pilots, we have to get to the fundamental question, which is the reason we're giving you this inoculation is to prevent blank COVID. Now, is it to protect you from contracting COVID, or is it to protect you from dying from COVID? Because it seems that children can contract COVID and develop natural immunity. And not that many of them die, right? So, again, it comes down to these actual figures. Is the inoculation designed to prevent children from dying from COVID? Is that the idea? Is that why we're going to inoculate 60 million children? To prevent them from dying?
Judy, I was wondering when you were going to get in here.
Right. Yeah. So if it's not to prevent them from dying, Dr. Walensky, why are you trying to prevent them from contracting it and developing natural immunity? Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just let them contract it like H5N7 and get sick and get better? Now, they won't get H5N7 that often. Why are we doing, in other words, well, how many kids died of COVID or with COVID? And wouldn't that be kind of a big part of this conversation? Same thing in the Marines, Captain Stewart. How many of your fellow Marines died of COVID? Wouldn't that
right now
be
in a local area? None that I know of.
All right. So what I would be asking leadership is simply that. So in other words, you want to inoculate us so that we don't die from COVID or so that we don't contract it and develop natural immunity? How many of us have died from this thing? How many? Give me a number.
You know, John,
so I'd force that.
So, John.
Go ahead.
So we were told that the vaccine would never be mandated upon rollout. We were lied to. We were told that the experimental gene therapy would stay in the deltoid. We were lied to. This was known not through as Pfizer's own biodistribution data clearly showed that in a matter of hours, it's dispersed throughout the entire body and it is concentrated in the ovaries. Pfizer knew this. We were told that the artificial RNA contained within the vaccine was not capable of entering the nucleus of the cell and changing our DNA. We were lied to. It has been unequivocally demonstrated that the vaccine is fully capable by reverse transcriptase of integration into our God-made DNA. You know, the Judeo-Christian tradition teaches that all humans are created in God's image through the DNA code that God himself created. I believe this includes specific base nucleotide sequences within our God-made DNA. The vaccine corrupts our DNA that was created by God and defaces our image of God manifest in our DNA. The federal government agencies admitted that they've not been transparent with regarding the vaccine, as you alluded to, John, with Rochelle Walensky. She stated that. They rationalize this by suggesting that if it were released and it were transparent, it would be misinterpreted. This is extremely concerning because I believe that all clinicians, all of us, should have full access and transparency to this data to make our own decisions with our patients as to the, quote, safety of the vaccine. If there's no transparency of that data, then informed consent's null and void. You know, the World Economic Forum and this Satanist Yuval Harari from Israel suggests that, you know, we can all become our own gods. He says, and I can pretty much quote you on this, having raised humanity above the beastly level of survival struggles, we will now aim to upgrade humans into gods and turn Homo sapiens into Homo Deus, that is, man gods.
What an idiot. Dangerously, dangerously insane. All right, who wants to go?
Let's get
Deborah, and then John.
Okay.
Deborah?
So we know that the spike protein contains snake codons. So now, do we have a hybrid human that's part reptilian? Do they take these shots? What do
Brian?
You think, Jim?
Or Jim?
My view on that. My feeling is absolutely that is the most insane thing and the most evil thing I could even think of. But I do want people to understand, when I was looking into the snake venom aspect of COVID-19, if you look at the two people, just look at the two people who created and are credited with creating the mRNA vaccines for COVID-19. Their names are Drew Weissman and Catalin Carrico. Go look at the research studies I went through and showed with Mike Adams and other interviews. These two people at the University of Pennsylvania have been paid by Anthony Fauci since at least 2009 to do one thing and one thing only. They are funded by the NIAID department. You can see it on all the research studies since 2009, and it states they are being funded by the NIH to do mRNA gene editing therapy. In that research, the method to do the study, to do gene editing therapy using mRNA, is to use snake venom phosphodiesterase to cleave the RNA and the DNA to insert the mRNA. That's what they've been doing since 2009. So the idea that snake venom isn't in the shots is really unrealistic. It's in there. They're using components that they know destroys, cleaves, and cuts RNA and DNA to insert mRNA. At the same time period, there is tons of research studies since 1984. They have taken the mRNA of snake venom, which is the most stable in nature, period, of all mRNA, and they wrap it with nanoparticle hydrogel, magnetic dynabeads, which are little microscopic nanoparticle magnets called parasupermagnets, and this is exactly what Catalin Carrico and Drew Weissman have been doing, using to do their research. Am I concerned they're doing this? You better believe it. I also disclose, though, that the actual chemical they're using to cleave RNA and DNA is called snake venom phosphodiesterase. You can go online and you can buy it. You can buy snake venom phosphodiesterase to do your own gene editing at home if you would like. Innovative Research is the company that sells it, and they disclose to the buyers, you can't mix snake venom phosphodiesterase that the co-creditors and creators of these vaccines for COVID-19. It says if you have snake venom phosphodiesterase you're doing research with, you cannot mix it with glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, ascorbic acids, which is vitamin C, or EDTA, because those totally denature and destroy snake venom phosphodiesterase's mechanism of action. So,
Wait a minute. That's why glutathione and vitamin C are good for jab recovery, right?
If they're using a synthetic form of snake or the natural form of snake venom phosphodiesterase, which is what the two creators of COVID-19 shots are using in their research since 2009, funded by Anthony Fauci, who, by the way, owns some of the patents and royalties on mRNA shots called Moderna. So these same shots that they've been investing in and funding, they've been using snake venom phosphodiesterase to do gene editing therapy. That's what they say in their studies. That's what they print. If anybody's gotten these mRNA shots and they're using snake venom phosphodiesterase to cleave your DNA, to do gene editing therapy, which they've been doing successfully for over a decade, and the makers of that say you can't mix it with glutathione, NAC, ascorbic acid, vitamin C, or EDTA. Anyone who has these shots in their body, including military personnel, if you've had any injury, if you have any symptoms or side effects since the shot, your body is supposed to be replicating spike proteins right now, which I actually would call snake proteins. I think they're getting your body to generate your own poisons and toxins in your body. Regardless,
well, that's what mRNA is for, isn't it? Isn't the whole point of messenger RNA to teach your DNA a new thing like a virus does? A virus infects your cell. You know, I need Judy on this one. And Deborah, I had to mute your line just for a minute because we had a little background noise. But is snake venom uniquely qualified in the world to split cells and DNA and open that stuff up because it's a neurotoxin? Judy, help me out here.
Yeah, but you have to have the fangs. You have to inject it. Because,
like a needle,
or
like a needle, right?
Yeah, kind of like a needle, kind of like that shot. So the central dogma, if you will, and that's my least favorite word in the world, dogma, is that DNA, the central dogma of molecular biology is that your DNA is transcribed into messenger RNA and translated into protein. Well, in 2004, more or less, when Craig Venter and the government and company, another eugenicist and Satanist, sequenced the entire human genome, they found that 97% of the messenger RNA is never translated into protein. It is regulatory. It does post. It tells the DNA how to be expressed, when to be expressed, which tissue to be expressed in. And in fact, only, so think about that, 3% of your DNA in your messenger RNA is actually, messenger RNA is actually translated into protein. 3% of your genome, and probably closer to that 97%, but 8% is God-given endogenous. We're given a virome that said, these are my viruses, poisons. These are my protection. These are my genes that are expressed to tell me self, these are mine, versus non-self. Our human endogenous retroviruses and other viruses are 8% of our genome. That means you have 2.5 times more God-given endogenous viruses expressed that are protecting you from poison by simply when it enters your bloodstream, you say, ah, no, that even on your skin and your nasal pharyngeal cavity, no, that's not me. Let's send all the fire trucks to the fire. The immune cells then go out. They express various chemokines, cytokines, this cytokine storm. Type 1 interferons. Interferons mean interfere with the infection and expression of viruses. The COVID bioweapon was weaponized SARS-CoV-2 such that the interferon sensors on the cells aren't expressed. Oh, so you can't send the fire trucks to the fire, and you don't know where the fire is in the body, and you can't do it. So they've attempted to bypass our genome. And I just want to say to Jim and the rest of the audience is not one single test. Safety, double-blind, placebo-controlled study has been done since 1986 on any of these monkey, mouse, cow, pig, aborted fetal cell line manufactured. So in all the previous cases, The animal immortalized cancer, if you will, immortalized, they grow forever in the lab. All of those are manufacturing plants. So now, as Brian just said, now our cells manufacture the poison. Well, they've taken those poisons in the animal manufacturing plants and injected them without a single safety study for 30 years since all liability was removed. And that became the big problem in 2011 when we isolated these, we call them XMRVs, xenotropics. They were named murine mouse leukemia cancer, blood cancer causing viruses. Oh, and when you changed a few codons, they caused Parkinson's disease, meaning a few base pairs, when you just engineered the spike protein. And this is all work by my colleagues, the Rossettis, and this was our work in 2000, starting in 1980. We knew in 1980 the spike protein or envelope alone, that's what your immune system sees as non-self if it's a human virus popping out of that lipid bilayer, meaning fat, phosphodiesterase, you know, they cut and the lipases cut fat, so they cut through your cell membrane. All we've known those were toxic and deadly, and yet the FDA never approved them, and we've been injecting them in pregnant women, for 30 years. And on the first day of life with the hepatitis B vaccine, you'll destroy your epigenetic. That's when your methylation, when you silence which genes go on and off, your on and off switch. When you're born, it says, okay, this is my environment. Not mom, not dad, new human being. Wipe off all the imprinting and start over according to the environment to express the genes and develop the primary innate immune response. You know, and this is, I'm sorry, it's simple biology. And any doctor who's ever injected one of these untested, unsafe things into a child, not knowing the ingredients, because they're not told to, and none of the studies have been done, as double-blind placebo-controlled studies. I've made immune therapies and drugs from plants since June 10th, 1980. It's not done, and it's never been done. And they say, oh, they're biologics. We can't do that. Oh, yeah, we can do it, and I've been doing it my whole life. You don't want to do it. You change the rules so you could experiment. So for 40 years, they found the most vulnerable. They did their experiments. They see when they can, with thalidomide, when they can develop, alter arm development. They see how they inflame the brain. SIDS, now they're calling it sudden adult death, the SADS. We were sudden infant death, and now this isn't rocket science. This is premeditated murder, and that's what COVID was intended to do, is murder that 10% of the people who you injected, and it was the military, by Deborah Birx and Robert Redfield. Oh, that was that head of CDC. Oh, they did this little clinical trial with an AIDS vaccine, an HIV-AIDS vaccine in the militaries in the mid-90s. And they gave the military AIDS. Oh, and PTSD. Oh, and Gulf War. And they injected all these XMRVs, xenotropic, because they don't come from humans. They come from other animals. And now I call it mouse, monkey, and manufactured viruses. You created these synthetic viruses, that's what every one of the shots are. And nobody gets that. But they've seen that in vaccine court. So they literally quantified the injuries. They saw which children would get, oh, I showed a picture of monkeypox yesterday. I texted to you, Greg, on Clay Clark show. You know, that came from vaccine court. Of a vulnerable boy, a Vietnamese boy, as John was saying, the Vietnamese don't get the disease. Now we're going back to the monkeys, and we all know Sierra Leone, Liberia, and we were talking about Ready Plains. Do you remember summer of 2014? Oh, we had an Ebola outbreak to cover up the CDC crime and the MMR vaccine in black boys. you know, when it was finally admitted 15 years later by William Thompson, oh, so you simply had this ready plane of this biosafety level 4, and Obama stood next to Fauci, and we all watched it go to the CDC while they carried Dr. Kent Brantley and Nurse Nancy, and they carried all those people, and they all had Ebola. And would they survive? And Dr. John, the head of the operation there, gave them hydroxychloroquine, saline. They prayed for them. And this strong man's immune system recovered. And then smart nurses said, uh-uh, you aren't quarantining me. See, they tried this in 2014 with Ebola, and it didn't work. So now we got the common cold. You know, and this is event 201. You know, unless we wake up. You know, and that's in our book, Plague of Corruption, but it's a book called Called for Life by Kent and Amber Brantley. In the biblical sense, he almost lost his life trying to heal people with an Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone. Oh, those pesky black people sitting on the diamonds and oil. We're just going to kill them to cover up that we've been killing little black children worldwide and Hispanics and Native Americans and Asians in order to experiment and see how to take out, you know, the strongest immune systems in our country. And that's what they've done this entire time. How do we do it from day of birth? There's never been any reason to inject hepatitis B vaccine on the first day of life except to destroy your brain forever. You're set up. You're set up not to express your genes in the appropriate way. We'll never know what those kids have been. And here in Oxnard, California, after our first book, Plague, came out, a nurse who was shaking like a leaf, Parkinson's, oh, there's an XMRV for you. This, we knew what the codons changed, caused the psychosis or caused the cancer. And it's two or three base pairs, and you'll never figure it out. And we've been weaponizing, as Brian said, with the snake venom peptides. That's the gene called syncytin. So we have an endogenous, God-given syncytin. It's the fusogenic protein, syncytia, our virus envelope spike protein fused cells. So that allows the virus to escape the immune system recognition because it's transmitted cell to cell without ever hitting the periphery. They're fused. They're tumors. It's the protein that fuses the blastocyst, 64-cell embryo, the blastocyst, placenta containing, into the uterine cell wall. They can't do it. They can only get in vitro fertilization to that point. And then you must have syncytin, our God-given gene, turned on in a female uterus with the right hormones. And that syncytin, the Velcro, binds it, sticks it, feeds the embryo, and you're off as soon as the baby is born. And those methylation patterns, post-translational modifications with glyphosate destroys, all of these things destroy that in the environmental toxin. And Stephanie Seneff and I have been working together more than a decade to show how the mechanisms of glyphosate take glycine with a phosphate group on it, and you literally are like a vacuum cleaner pulling the syncytin, the snake venom peptides, into cells from other animals because the transporter, house and XPR1, it's a phosphate transporter that brings all these xenopeptides into cells, and you create huge inflammatory, auto-inflammatory cytokine storms, and you can't turn them off because you destroyed the on and off switch. And you intentionally did that with that type 1 interferon pathway. And this was the work of Bob Silverman. And he's the one that first described XMRV in aggressive prostate cancer. Oh, the black women and men would get aggressive prostate cancer. And I was studying the biomarkers of that in 1999 when I headed the Lab of Antiviral Drug Mechanisms at NIH. Oh, so we realized, the biomarker is you don't have RNase-L, a single nucleotide polymorphism, R462Q, single nucleotide change, one base pair, and you can't break down those RNA-DNA hybrids where you're going to reverse transcribe from RNA to DNA and insert yourself into the zone. You can't fix that. They created it so you couldn't fix it. They inject it in mostly black and mostly the military. Robert Redfield, Deborah Birx, yeah, they got a lot to cover up. So COVID-19 is murder everybody who you injured over the last 40 years, and that's going to be a good 10% of the people. Because if you make antibodies, if you already have been exposed, this is the danger to these kids. You know, oh, wait a minute, they have natural immunity. That shot has been shed everywhere. Those shots, those people who had the monkey one will get antibody-dependent enhancement. This is what Gert Van Den Bosch was saying. Just one part of your innate immunity. We already have immunity. Mom already gives you antibodies to tell you the difference in utero and as you breastfeed for the first. We're seeing the kids die in breastfeeding, as I'm sure Jim can comment on. So sorry for the biochemistry, but when your doctors don't understand basic biochemistry, perhaps they should be fired.
Yeah. No, you just proved this is a, for me who's not a biochemist, you just proved that this is a bioweapon, because why would you engineer getting around the human immune system if you're trying to do something good? I mean, you just proved the case.
Correct.
Let's go around the panel.
Correct, and we've been saying it for 40 years. 40 years.
Oh, yeah, well, we're listening now, but I wish it's too bad it took too long. I think I heard John, and then Deborah has a question. I'm going to go around the panel, then we'll get to Tom, and then Jim, and then Brian. Who's that?
Yeah, Tom Stewart.
Oh, Tom, yeah. Okay, why don't you go ahead then, and then I'll go to Deborah and then John. Tom, go ahead.
Judy, that was a very great analysis as far as covering natural immunity goes. Tell you, there's about to be an opening for a flight doc at Whiting Field very soon as far as this natural immunity stuff goes. We have a Marine with us who was exempt from MMR on paper. Said Marine did not want to go take the MMR vaccine before he deployed because his wife is pregnant. And he'd done his homework, said, hey, if I go home, I take this MMR vaccine. I will spread the proteins or whatever you would shed to your wife and could possibly damage the baby. But that Marine got a medical exemption for that particular vaccine. But right now, no one is able really to get a medical exemption except one of our guys because of a heart issue to this vaccine. But, yeah, everything you said was spot on, and I kind of wanted to tie that in as far as the immunity piece goes. And they're basically violating their own publications, Department of Defense-wide, 6230-15 Bravo, that specifies, hey, you can have a waiver from a vaccine if you already have natural immunity.
Makes me wonder why it's worth it for them to destroy the military when they know this does no good. When you know, it's proven, yet the other vaccines as vaccines, and they treat this as like an obsession. Deborah, you had a question.
Yeah, I want to go back to what Brian was saying about the phosphodiesterase, and just ask a question of the clinicians. I know that the package insert says that about the rattlesnake venom, but would that imply in vivo? Okay, so in vitro is in the test tube, in vivo is in the body. If we took people, particularly probably right after they got the shot, I mean, I don't know if it would work later on, but as long as that phosphodiesterase is continuing to work, if we gave them intravenous vitamin C, gave them intravenous glutathione, could we stop the DNA mutations, the mutilation, you know, can we deactivate it? And then take it further, you know, Judy kept saying, you know, they fixed it so we couldn't turn this stuff off. Is there a way? Are we getting any closer to figuring out how to shut this stuff off?
Oh, sure. It's simple. It's absolutely simple to turn it off with clean food. You don't want to infuse glutathione because it's, you're forcing it back in the cell. You know, so when I show, and I know I show the complicated stuff, but there are products. Dimethylglycine alone, put two methyl groups on a glycine. It's an amino acid. It's food. There was a book written, I don't know, early 1980s when I was a natural products chemist. It's, oh, here's food. Dimethylglycine alone is the on-off switch. So we got to swamp out the glyphosate. With dimethylglycine, there's a product called Immune Formula 200, which was made by Albert Crum, who's about 100 years old, and for radiation poisoning, Ted Fogarty, who's an expert in that, introduced me to that a few years ago, that product. It's just the basic building blocks, clean amino acids, L-cysteine, glutamate, and glycine. You have to have glycine, the key amino acid. So we're all swamped out with glyphosate, so we can't make our own glutathione. We can't make our own vitamin D. You don't force vitamin D back in cells. And the big problem with IV products is they're made with corn and they're loaded with glyphosate. So you're actually infusing the poison, and that's exactly what the FDA wants you to do. And so then they can say, see, you know, you need our, and you further poison yourself and you get discouraged. No, we have to go back to eating clean food. And right now those have to be powdered and purified solutions, because you want to eat them, because we can't digest food. We can't metabolize food anymore because it's all plastic, it's all GMO, and that just synergizes with the toxicity in the shots. And that's what's been, you know, and again, all the FDA knew it all along. They gave themselves authority for efficacy of drugs. That's not their job. They did that in the 60s, right when they developed had the cell lines for the monkey kidney cell line and the aborted fetal cell lines. They've been in our labs collecting poisons. We treat them with antimycotics, with antibiotics. We do clones. I made the clone Vero E6. And how you do limited dilution cloning, get one cell that isn't killed by Ebola. That was my job. And then I also infected normal human stem cell or a primary monocyte, that's your innate immune response that fights these things, with a non-pathogenic variant called Ebola's Reston, came out of the CIA in Reston, Virginia. And then the pathogenic Zaire strain, which is the one they shipped in 2014 to Sierra Leone to kill them and take your eyes off the target and create another target. The difference is the signature, the inflammatory signature of disease in the monocytes, published on it in Nature in 1992. They knew exactly how to kill them, and they did. But all you need is clean food. Products that are not injections, are not made by them, independent, and all the things we talked about, Deborah, at your meeting, we're killing our food sources, and that's the big problem. So Dr. Janice Schmidt, all the natural products, all the things we know, we really have to go back to our own communities and grow our own food, and that's why people will see God's given us all we need, but our food supply is poison.
I think they've taken the seeds, too, if I remember.
I'd like to say something to Deb.
Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, just for the record, I use a non-corn source of vitamin C, beet, and it's organic.
Mm. Oh, thank you.
I absolutely, Deb, have been recommending to people after the mRNA shots that I do believe, like, they used intravenous vitamin C to beat COVID symptoms in China. I absolutely am convinced, based on the snake venom phosphodiesterase, I'm convinced anybody getting mRNA shots, the sooner the better. They should do infusions with vitamin C, but it cannot be corn-based, like Judy said. I also do recommend, like she said, food, obviously, is the greatest thing. Clean food, healthy food, organic food, obviously, is what people should do. They are attacking NAC because they know N-acetylcysteine will protect against the blood clotting effects of these shots and from COVID and the venom, period. That's why their FDA is trying to go after them. I do recommend NAC with selenium orally, just as these manufacturers for that substance, when they were selling it, they said don't mix it with NAC or cysteine products. NAC and selenium can together be used, 500 milligrams of NAC with 200 micrograms of selenium. The liver will use to generate its own glutathione, just like it would if it had those minerals coming from foods if you ate them and consumed them. But for people who have had these injections inside their body, you need to increase the dose of those minerals and those amino acids to assist the body to heal. I think it's traumatic on the body. So absolutely, I'm convinced the sooner the better to try to negate. And like Judy said, I'm not sure they can actually do gene editing therapy, but if they've got snake venom phosphodiesterase, its job is to shred and destroy cells and organs in your body, which is going to create autoimmune diseases, neurological diseases, death of heart cells leading to myocarditis and scarring and death to some. So absolutely, I think you should flood their body with as much of those minerals and vitamins as possible.
Yeah, Brian, we've had several calls for people to we've had a ton of calls for people to get the exact formula what they need to do for foods, for nutrition, for supplements, things like that. So please send me something that that we can post. Okay, who wants in on this, Deborah?
Well, I have a question because I used dimethylglycine years ago, and now this product that I use as a methylation support has trimethylglycine, and I'm trying to understand. I know it's one more methyl group, but will trimethylglycine not work?
It will work. It's just that it's upstream. So in fact, there are products where you have both. A product by Da Vinci Labs called Behavior has both dimethyl and trimethylglycine. It's just where it feeds into the methyl pool. One is from choline, and then one is at the top. So it's yes, trimethylglycine will work, but not as well. And of course, S-adenosyl methionine is a donor in our an essential amino acid in our soil that's been depleted as well. So we have a number of these products. We've worked with Dr. Tracy at the Get Healthy store, people who make these detox products and these clean foods. And you can find it all at shop.therealdrjudy.com. It takes you right to a bunch of professionals. We've been working with Dr. Stella Emanuel, Dr. Zev Zelenko to get these products that they make that work into one place and get them as cheap as we can. And that's what the opportunity of, we talked to Dr. Janice Schmidt while we were there. This is what I do. I go everywhere and try to get products that work and help when I go to these meetings and get them to where people can know where to go quickly, because it's just too confusing to go to a Costco. You're just going to get contaminated products, and like with, you have to know the source of your IV. Not that it wouldn't work, it's that my fear is most people run out and do it and they don't have professionals and people in the know like Deborah, and it can make it worse. So everything, and same thing with selenium, too much selenium and you're toxic. So there's bulk minerals and sea minerals and things we have to think about. If you use too much zinc, you deplete copper. And so it's so hard for people to just run out and know what to do. So we try to link them with professionals and groups like Dr. Ben Marble and My Free Doctor, people who really know, like Deborah, like yourself and your practice. Get people to practice practitioners, because on their own, it's going to make the problem worse, and this is fodder for the Satanists.
Sounds like Western medicine is becoming obsolete. We have a woman, Chancy Terry, who does a Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. And the more I hear about this, the more I realize that we're really, you know, medicine really needs to advance backwards to where it used to be, you know, where it was actually dealing with curing and working with people and their natural systems and enhancing those. And we've totally changed that around. Jim, John, we haven't heard from you two for a bit. And you don't have to wait for me to call on you. Just, if you have a point, you know, feel free. And we're going to step on each other. It's going to get awkward, but we'll figure it all out as we go. Jim or John?
Well, Jim, I think, was commenting on something I said earlier.
Let's go, John, first. Jim?
Yes. Thank you for your comments, Dr. Viglione and Dr. Micah Bitz, and to all the panel, Dr. Artis. I think that your inputs and your observations and your statements are greatly important to our audience and to all of the healthcare providers and all the citizens of this world. There is a significant risk of vaccinated pregnant women are undertaking by this vaccine that's being pushed by their OBGYN doctors and by the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And pregnancies are being miscarried, spontaneous abortion. Fetuses are being killed in the womb. That's called, after 20 weeks, that's called a fetal death or a stillbirth. And children are being permanently damaged after birth from this vaccine. I can't emphasize the importance of this, and my focus is protect women, all women, and women of reproductive age. Men, it's not that I don't care about you. It's that my focus is on women. That's what I do. I do care about the men and the pilots and all of you, but as a limited reservoir of our generational heritage, it's in the ovaries. It's not in your testes, guys. It's in the ovaries. So when I see the devastating biodistribution data that was obtained by FOIA, from the Japanese Pfizer biodistribution data, we know that back in 2012, the unheralded interaction and lies that we've been told about the lipid nanoparticles staying in the arm and not affecting, you know, a fetus at 30 weeks gestation pretty much has all the eggs she's going to have for the rest of her life. And yet this poison is concentrated in the ovaries, the lipid nanoparticle, the toxic, alterated, unnatural mRNA cargo that the lipid nanoparticles take to the ovaries, and every single one of those ova. That represents entire humanity. That represents the human genome from here to kingdom come.
Yeah, that's why we do this. I mean, you're absolutely right. Anybody has a comment on that? I want to change the subject a little bit. I got a question for Tom. Dr. Molly James is on the line right now. We're going to bring her in. I have to take a break for a
couple
minutes.
I do want to comment on that.
Just because.
I do need to comment on what...
No, please do.
Yeah, so something Dr. Thorpe just said.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Thorpe, one of the statistics coming out of the CDC is that for people younger than 85, two-thirds of the people that died with COVID are men. Two-thirds of the deaths are men. So that's just a fact coming out of the CDC. I'm also looking at bears right now.
what have they found?
I don't know. I don't know. But I'm looking at bears, and bears now is recording 4,690 miscarriages and 10,575 cases of vaginal or uterine hemorrhaging. 10,575. And that's just what was recorded in bears. A lot of doctors are reluctant to record something in bears. And there's 10,575 cases of vaginal uterine hemorrhaging. So again, I come back to my fundamental root cause analysis question, which is why would somebody who's pregnant want to get the vaccine in order to protect them from what? Is it that they think they're going to die from COVID, and that's why they're getting the vaccine? They're afraid they're going to die. Is that the reason?
John,
is that the rationale?
No. It's in part, that's true. But listen, we live in a hierarchical medical society, if you will, the cartel, the focus. We've taken away, we've neutralized every single independent thinker in the physicians and nurses. Listen, we're all under a gag order. You know, I'm in a horacious battle with the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology because, by the way, you know, I hold them responsible because they are the ones forcing the OBGYNs that are forcing their patients to get these injections. And it's the hospital systems. It's the American Board of OBGYN. It's a Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. It's American College of OBGYN. You know, all the others, you know, I'm going to choose my battle with them because they're the one destroying the genetics and the generational.
How do we get here, though? How did we get to this place? How do we get to this cascading disaster where no one is thinking critically and those who are, again, there's the ad hominem attack. If you think critically and take any path other than this path that's recommended by the CDC, how did we get to this point where there's no critical thinking allowed?
It's a massive bribe. If you look at the COVID community care that was administered over 15 months ago, it came out with tens of billions of dollars that are going to the pockets of, quote, the enablers at the grassroots level, social media, mainstream media, all of the the American College of OBGYN was a founding member. So I'm all of these people have received, have had the option for massive amounts of financial aid from the Fed to push the fake narrative. Independent physicians, patients be damned, okay? They're going to be...
Where are they getting the money, though? Is this all our tax money, or
they
is
print it
funded?
You just keep printing.
They
That's
print
why
it.
Your inflation
okay.
rate is 15%.
Is it diverted from other spending, like COVID rescue or something like that, or where is it coming from? Who knows?
It's coming from the printing press.
Okay, but is it under the guise of another bill? That's what I'm wondering, Judy.
There's a 75-cent tax on every inoculation. Per that National Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, on every vaccination that the taxpayers pay, and only 59 cents out of the 75 goes to the compensation program. They've compensated over $4 billion for injuries over the past, 30 years, and they've stolen, 20 cents off of every single shot. All the MMRs, and that's MMR, so that's $225 for that shot from the taxpayer. Yeah, and they use that money for commercials that are lies, are criminal fraud. So we've got how we got here is we allowed it. We allowed direct-to-consumer advertising, and it's fraud. There isn't one commercial on TV. Not one drug has been tested. You name it, Opdivo, whatever, in combination with any shots. And in fact, watch some of these commercials, and they say, oh, don't get a live viral vaccine if you're going to take this drug. Did anybody say anything about that to the people they forced to get these live viral vaccines, the annual flu shot? You walk in that grocery store, clerk gives you a flu shot, a Prevnar shot, and now a COVID shot at the same time. This is criminal, and it's been going on for 40 years because we allowed it. All liability was taken away. Big Pharma controls the literature. Big Pharma controls the medical literature. Tess Lowry, the PhD from the UK, testified about the fraudulent literature with ivermectin. This is Pierre Corey as well, the MD, and with ivermectin. And Sermon had a double-blind placebo-controlled study. These are purinergic modulators. That was, Sermon, that's an antidote for snake venom. Every time I say it publicly, Bayer, Monsanto, give us our Sermon. It's a 100-year-old essential medicine, medicinal chemistry, used properly. You need a drop like every 2 months. Now nobody can get it. It cured autism. Literally, and these kids got their lives back and they dropped it. And because it's not patented. It's a 100-year-old drug that costs pennies on the dollar. So this has been going on because we've allowed it. We've given the doctors, this Paul Thomas been fighting this. I think of whole books of vaccine injury. We've been fighting in this vaccine court. All you have to do is look at all the cases. Cytokine storm, cytokine storm, cytokine storm. Oh, it never left the injection site. Oh, it has nothing to do. There's no such thing as a cytokine storm, Frank Rossetti and I were told for the last 30 years. He discovered them, Dr. Rossetti. This is ridiculous. And it's been going on and it needs to stop at every level. We need the FDA to go away, the CDC to go away, the EPA to go away. They're criminal organizations. And this is what Bobby Kennedy Jr. shows you in the book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And he doesn't even talk about the sciences of the XMRVs and the COVID and how we isolated from the people with disease all the variants that we're talking about now, as if they just popped up. No, they've been killing people since 2004. And so now they just have to premeditated kill everybody so they can cremate them. Cover it up. This is what John Cullen taught me. Oh, that cloning of the entire sequence of the pandemic influenza strain of flu, a 2004 paper. Look up Reed and Tautenberger, I think R-E-I-D is the first author. And there you are, right there. We made the flu-nami. you know, oh, that was the virus that Fauci was going to release that he promised. The flu then president, or he promised President Trump, and literally the Sunday before the election and right after he was on 60 Minutes, promising you that little flu NAMI. They cloned it in 2004. They know exactly the base pairs that are the deadly part of that variant. And they just put it all in a database, and they manufacture it at will, and they inject into everybody. It's not rocket science, folks. It's a crime.
That's amazing. Judy, I love having you on the show. You're so clear with everything that you're saying. I want to hold up for a second, because if I don't, we never will. We've just a little over an hour left. Do you believe it? And so this group's going to meet as long as this group wants to meet. I'm going to make this show available to all of you. I've got Molly James on the line. I want to get her on. I've got a question for Captain Tom Stewart. I want to ask him afterwards, because based on what Jim was saying and something I heard in a previous podcast of his, that as they're weeding out the doctors that are independent, they're weeding out the military that's independent. And all you're going to have left is a bunch of COVID zombie apocalypse. And of course, my big question is, the big conspiracy fear is, are they trying to create a military that may fire on Americans? Given, you know, what these people might want to do and what we might want to do to resist. We've got all that coming up. I've got to take a break. I'm going to mute everybody. So go, you know, grab your Mikovits special cocktail and just hang with us. We're going to be back in about maybe 5 or 6 minutes. And so everybody's going to get muted so you can make all the noise. Yeah, I got to remember not to mute myself. Okay. Anyway, we'll be back. A couple things I got to play for you guys. And actually, let's get the big one. It's the Trump birthday bash this Saturday, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis, host of Action Radio. Greetings, patriots from all across the Panhandle and from the Gulf Shores of Alabama and Mississippi. In conjunction with the Escambia Federated Republican Women, the Gulf Coast Patriots is hosting a huge birthday celebration to honor President Trump. Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the Ultra Mega Festival and Trump Birthday Party at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds, 8604 Bobby Brown Road in Milton, Florida. All conservative groups are specially invited. Bring your family and friends for fun and games, music, food, meet and greet the candidates, pony rides for the kiddies, show off your mega gear and America First swag. This is a tailgate-style event, so bring your chairs, tables, and tents. Come celebrate the birthday of the only person to be both the 45th and 46th president at the same time, our president, Donald Trump. Happy birthday, President Trump, and thank you for what you gave us. You gave us pride in our nation again. You made America First a goal that not only could be achieved, but was. Thank you for $1.85 gasoline and so much energy we could export it. Thank you for putting us on a level playing field with China. Thank you for not surrendering in Afghanistan and for trying to end the war there and everywhere we were involved. Thank you for not letting Russia invade Ukraine and North Korea for not testing nuclear missiles. Thank you for so many accomplishments when the entire Washington, D.C. deep state and the National Socialist media were against you. So let us just say now, happy birthday, Mr. President. See you all at the party, Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. You guys like my PSA? I've been broadcasting that since before I knew you guys. And so hopefully it's correct. If anything inaccurate, I might have to redo it. But as far as I know, it's pretty good. All right, I'm going to make everybody's line live again. I want to go at first to Captain Tom Stewart. Are we weeding out all the leaders of the military and keeping the COVID apocalypse clones for something who knows what?
More accurate name for those COVID zombies you're referring to is Yes Men. And okay. We have a publication called MCDP1 titled War Fighting. Flat out says ready compliance for the purpose of personal advancement, the behavior of yes men will not be tolerated. And right now the critical thinking, the thinkers are being weeded out and the yes men are being put in charge. One thing that was taught to me as a lieutenant and even as an aircraft commander out in Hawaii, every lieutenant's a provisional rifle platoon commander. And mm-hmm. They trained us back in 2008, 2009, you know, you're going to be out. They don't care if you're a pilot. You can be sent on an IA bill at any time. You need to know your skills as a provisional rifle platoon commander, which means you have to be able to think critically. You're the only officer there in times, make good decisions when hire is not around. And that's the standard they trained us to. Right now, hire's not making very good decisions. And the guys that are critical thinking, the figure I gave you, the 136,000, mm-hmm. are the ones that are fighting this COVID vaccine mandate the hardest, and those are the guys you want to stay in, and that's the ones they're trying to weed out right now as a result of this. But yeah, COVID why? Zombie, you can just go call them yes men, and
is the military always been trying to do this, or is this a new thing, or is this something that we I always like to know the why, and you can speculate, feel free, or yeah.
Right now, just pretty trying to create a ready compliant force. It's kind of my observation right now, but even when you question these orders right now, they've taken those that have questioned this and basically said, you know what, you're no longer good enough to work here. For example, you're no longer good enough to fly at Whiting Field. And they've labeled everyone that has turned this thing down as a conspiracy theorist and just discarded them elsewhere. And there's hundreds of grounded pilots that I know of right now that are dealing with the same stuff in the military over this.
But yeah, the why, that's only for the people in the Pentagon. They probably have the real answer to that. And, you know, I'm sure
they know me. I'm going to keep asking until I find out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Go ahead. I want to make sure you finish. I think I interrupted there, Tom.
No, yeah, okay. That's pretty much all I got. We got many, many yes men that will be in charge, and the critical thinkers are being weeded out right now. Mm-hmm. And going to affect it wide.
Yeah. So you weed out the doctors who know what they're doing. You weed out the doctors that have the cures, you know, that prove the what's working, because the people that receive the early treatments are still here, and those on the remdesivir ventilator death march are not. I mean, I hate to be that blunt, but that's pretty much what's going on. So you weed out the doctors, you weed out the government people that think they got rid of Donald Trump. You know, that we all know the election was stolen. And so you look through our entire society. This is how communism works. I mean, this is the cultural revolution, the great leap forward, the whatever you want to call it, the Pol Potts and the, you know, and then the Castros and the you know, Hugo Chavez. It's all the same thing. And it's happening to us. This is why we need to stop it. So I want to spend some time on solutions. I'm going to talk about some of our legislation briefly, but I want to get Dr. Molly James to enter and sign in. Please, you know, introduce yourself, your specialties, and you have a bill to talk about. Or a law that was just passed. So let's get to that.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Dr. Molly James, I'm a board-certified general surgeon and critical care physician. I'm certified in functional medicine. Going into the pandemic, I worked about 18 months. I started out by volunteering in New York City when things were very dire. Went back and forth between the Midwest and New York, working in ICUs throughout three surges. So I've kind of seen it all. Relieved of duty in September, because I declined the shots, and also because I was wanting to treat patients properly with ivermectin in the hospitals. And the yes men in our business didn't understand the risk-benefit analysis and declined that. So that's kind of where I come from. I founded the James Clinic. We've treated about 4,000 patients with COVID and kept them out of the hospital, or were able to get them out of the hospital against medical advice, and we had 100% success in doing that.
Wow. And this is the thing that's so staggering, the success of Dr. Ben Marble, who it's a shame he's not here to join us today. We've got to get him back. But all of you who have been treating people successfully with outrageous percentages, you know, approaching or at 100%, and yet that's not documented, it's not written about, it's not talked about, it's not even there. And the suppression, this obsession with the, I don't know what you call it, the fascist takeover, you know, it's got to be more than just the money. The money, the power, the control, for whatever reason they're doing this to us. The bioweapon aspects, everything else like that. The successes aren't being talked about, which is why we need to do it now. Molly, do you have questions for anybody in the panel, or does anybody in the panel have questions for Molly? Who wants to go?
I just got.
Just jump right in.
I was going to make a comment.
Right,
we got a bunch of people. Go ahead.
Our adversaries right now are not purging militaries like America is.
I was going to ask Dr. Artis something about the remdesivir thing.
Sure.
And Dr. Judy as well, and Dr. Molly. So there was something that happened again in last week's show. I said that I kind of look at this COVID pandemic as a multi-act play, and there's a very distinct dividing line between when the vaccines became available in roughly December of 2020,
mm-hmm.
So from that point forward and from that point prior. So to me, that's almost like if you're at a play, that's when they do an intermission. You go out to the lobby and you're allowed to get a cocktail. Right? It's a complete break in the flow. So everything that happened before these vaccines, there was some strange stuff going on, like remdesivir.
Well, that's still going on as far as I know.
All right. But so first of all, it's important for the audience to know that the WHO, the World Health Organization, does not recommend remdesivir for the treatment of COVID.
Oh.
And that's on their website. You can search that. You can type in the WHO recommends against remdesivir, and you'll see, yes, that's exactly what they say. So the World Health Organization recommends against the use of remdesivir for the treatment of COVID, and they've said that there's no efficacy here. So that's number one.
Well, they probably don't
number
have a patent like the health Nazis.
Well,
It's just, yeah. Again, these are just, you know, little things to pin up on your refrigerator, right? Grab a magnet and just kind of pin this up for a minute. So first of all, the WHO recommends against it. So that should be a little bit of a yellow flag at least. The next thing is, why would you go to a failed Ebola drug? So it didn't win the Ebola beauty pageant, right? Remdesivir was not the chosen drug. It failed. Along with another drug called ZMAP that was developed by Gary Kobinger and Dr. Chu in Canada. Now, in the summer of 2019, Dr. Chu was escorted out of Canada by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, along with her husband and her students, and sent back to China. She worked on ZMAP, which was another contender for the Ebola treatment. Now, Dr. Judy, you've worked on Ebola. You know all about the Ebola spike proteins. If Dr. Chu and Gary Kobinger are working on ZMAP, and this woman has an intimate familiarity with the Ebola spike proteins, and ZMAP also doesn't win, it doesn't get FDA approval, it goes to the scrap pile, just like remdesivir for Ebola. Then all of a sudden this supposed coronavirus shows up with characteristics completely different from all previous coronaviruses that we've seen epidemics. So SARS-CoV-1 didn't kill 1,000 people. MERS didn't kill 1,000 people globally. And all of a sudden we have this new SARS virus with spike proteins that somebody thinks, well, maybe the Ebola treatment will work. Why would you think that? Why would that be your go-to thing versus something like, I don't know, Xofluza from Shionogi or another antiviral? Why would your first go-to be a failed Ebola drug unless there were similarities in the spike protein between SARS-CoV-2 and Ebola? So let's start with Dr. Judy, but I want to hear what
let's
Dr.
Find
Artis
out, yeah.
has to
I want
say.
To go through everybody on this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Judy? So the simple thing is, that's why I brought up Called for Life and the experiment in 2014, because they released the Vero E6 cell line. Remember, the virus doesn't come out of the cell line. All the viruses that are in the cell line are injected into the person along with the one they're calling the vaccine strain. And that's the point, is that Ebola Vero A6 is the exact cell line that they made SARS-CoV-2 and published it. The author is, let's see if it's Moore. The author is the Journal of Virology, 2004, retrovirus is pseudotyped with severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus spike protein, efficiently expressed angiotensin converting. So what they did is they took MLV, murine leukemia virus syncytin, HIV, GP120, the glycoprotein that sits on the surface of the cell, along with GP41, which sticks down through the membrane, through the lipid bilayer, through your cell membrane, into the cell. And those are the antibodies that Gert van de Bosch is talking about on those N-terminal antibodies. And so then so this is not a coronavirus. It's a pararetrovirus. And they made it in 2004 in the same cell line that they released with Ebola to Sierra Leone. And what cured Kent Brantley? Hydroxychloroquine, saline, prayer. Oh, and they tried to use Regeneron. Remember, everybody's asking me, what about monoclonal antibodies? Well, there are only about 4 million of them as drugs right now. Tell me which one you're talking about. But that's what ZMAP is. Oh, it's a monoclonal antibody that has three components that were originally developed in the Canadian's National Microbiology Laboratory. So they've got an antibody that expresses, oh, that chimera, three-part tripartite virus. And so the cocktail was optimized for the use during the 2014 West Africa Ebola virus outbreak. I'm telling you, they've been injecting you with the same cell line and everything in it since 2004. And they've
created the drug
as the solution.
They just don't want to throw out the old drug. They just want to do it. They made it so they have to use it. Is that what's going on?
Well, I think when Dr. Judy, when you say VeroA6, when you talk about these cell lines and you talk about VeroA6, when I was in high school, we used to have Petri dishes with agar-agar. It sounds to me like VeroA6 is the adult NIH version of agar-agar. In other words, you can't grow viruses in agar-agar, so you go and clone monkey kidneys or dog brains or something so that you can grow your viruses in something.
And
the
you
point
don't
is
clone
that
them, you develop them. This is what I did for a living, is make things grow in the laboratory, create cancer. And you do that by evading various parts of the immune system. That's why I can see exactly what they're doing. You know, so the cell line
kind of a fundamental
never
thing.
Leave the lab.
All right, so to me, when you say VeroA6 or whatever, you're describing effectively like Petri dishes, but the thing we're growing in is effectively the kidney of a monkey or the brain of a something or whatever, and that's
You're growing it effectively in a liquid culture. It's not in agar, and it's immortalized. It lives forever. You freeze them in a mill vial. And every year when you make that polio vaccine, you grow up zero monkey kidney cell line, not necessarily the clone E6, which we made to support Ebola and SARS-CoV-2 and SIV and simian virus 40. These are all in the cell line. And the clones are further deficient such that the immune system of the cells don't cut up the virus. You've got to manufacture a virus in order to study it, in order to use it as a vaccine, in order to attenuate it. But it's not one virus. There are millions of viruses in these cell lines from insects, from flies. We use antimycotics. We use antibiotics. There's bacteria. There's Borrelia. That's the causative agent of Lyme disease. Borrelia, Babesia, Mycoplasma, mold. What did AIDS patients die of? Pneumocystis, pneumonia, and TB. You know, these cell lines, the manufacturing plant, all I do is take a mill vial, put it in my pocket, go to Europe, and hand it to a laboratory, and they grow it in their fermenter. Well, now it's illegal to put it in your pocket. You have to sign that on the custom form. So they ship it FedEx because it's illegal. Tony Fauci shipped VeroA6 from Fort Detrick in 2015 to China. This isn't the China virus. It's the Tony Fauci Fort Detrick virus, and they're in Canada. We've been studying them. I did all of this work in Canada when we isolated the XMRV. We went to Ottawa. We went to Europe. We went everywhere. And everybody said, uh-oh, they figured it out. We got caught. Kill the messenger, destroy Judy Mikovits and Frank Rossetti and anybody else who dare tell the truth, and we'll just continue on. The band played on. Watch the movies. The Dallas Buyers Club. The band played on. 1993, Alan Alda. It opens with Ebola. Wake up, folks. That's all I can say.
All right.
And yes,
I want
to bring these drugs back. To bring these drugs back and use them, they spent a lot of money on them.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what it is. They got them in the warehouse. They got to use them somehow to make their profits back. I want to get back to Molly, and looks like John's joined us again. I'm not sure how that happened, but I've got you listed here twice on the show. I'll worry about that in a minute. Anyway, I wanted to. We've had a lot of technical stuff, and I wanted folks are probably thinking to themselves, what can we do? How can we help? What action can we take? And one of the things that really helps is a bill that Molly found. Go ahead and describe what's happened, because this is actually really good news.
Yeah, so shockingly in Missouri, what we were able to get accomplished is they passed a bill through the House and Senate, where it was just signed into law last week by the governor, that prohibits the State Board of Registration for Healing Arts from basically investigating, attacking, or penalizing any physician for prescribing ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. And as a second part of the bill, pharmacists cannot contact the prescribing physician or the patient to dispute the efficacy of ivermectin or hydroxy unless the physician or patient initiates the inquiry.
So how'd you get this passed, and who did it, and how much did it cost, and who'd you talk to? And I want the story, because this is citizen legislation, if you guys wrote it or did it yourself or however it came about, because that's why I'm so curious.
So I'm asking that question as well. I'm involved with Informed Health Choice Missouri. We lobbied a couple of times at the Capitol. We made the rounds. This actually surprised me on Twitter. Somebody tagged me and said that I was probably part of it, and I actually wasn't. I'm just one of the very grateful beneficiaries. So it doesn't solve the problem of getting the drug to the patient. It doesn't solve the problem of the fact that they price jacked it and that it's now $5 a tablet, which makes a normal prescription around $600 for a 150-pound patient. And it doesn't correct the fact that insurance doesn't pay for it, but at least I know I can prescribe it and not be targeted like I have in other states.
Yeah. See, this is the solution. And this is why I started Action Radio, you know, back in 2014 when I first had the idea of combining a radio show with a citizen legislature, that we the people, in order to give our consent to be governed, we have to write the laws by which we are governed. And we still go through the legislative process. We still follow the Constitution, but it can work. And this is proof that it can work. Now, is it everything you want? No. So then you write another bill, and you change it, and you amend it, and you send it in. And what I'm hoping to do, and this is why I've asked for any like big media people to come on board, I'd love to have General Mike Flynn on the show. I'd love to have anybody that anybody knows, Dr. Simone Gold, because she's both an attorney and a doctor. You know, she would understand both the legal and the medical aspects of the things that we're trying to do here. And so this is critical, and this can be a working team. So every time you share this show, all of you that have worldwide audiences, every time that you endorse one of our bills, and Molly, I want to get you on those as well, and John, too, if you can. Anybody, Jim, I think you have endorsed them. I'm not sure. Anyway, that's not the point. But the point is that citizen legislation, I believe, absolutely 100% with all my heart, will work, and we'll be able to change things. And it's the alternative to the zombie apocalypse, to the, you know, if your only choice is bullets and bullets. And no, it's not the only choice. Bills. You know, we write the laws that we consent to be governed by, and then we lobby for them. We do what anybody else does, except we don't have the money, but we do have the votes. We do have the popularity. We've got the audience. And for any citizen that wants to become a lobbyist, it's free. You've already got the internet. Most people have a computer, you know, and it's very simple to copy the links to the bills that we have here available, send them into your legislators, send them into your media, send them to each other, send them to the doctors here, doctors send them back out again. Start talking about this, because the solutions that we've written in legislation are very simple, very straightforward. Now, I don't know, Molly, if you've had a chance to take a look at the big ones, the big three, which is vaccine product liability, a very simple bill that changes everything that says shall not be liable to shall be liable. The other ones would be the Section 230. Changing the immunity on big tech to make conditional so that they don't touch anything you post, anything that, you know, any of the search engines, you know. And so, and that one, and then one Dr. Zelenko and I wrote to change the emergency use authorization procedure so that either the president or the Congress or other parties in the FDA could actually make an EUA and fix the situation. Very straightforward, very simple, very logical bills. Molly, do you have a chance to take a look at those?
I'm aware of those in general. I think one of the specific issues that we have right now is we have a state of emergency that was declared and it's never been ended. And this is a problem.
That's the first thing to do. Yeah.
That's the first thing we need to do, right? Because as long as we have an emergency, then we have EUA products. And if we end the emergency, that all goes away, right? The problem is there's a lot of money flowing. And so everyone's disincentivized to end the emergency because the money stops flowing.
I would argue there is no emergency if there's less than 500 children dead that are under 5 years old. In other words, we're getting ready to approve the inoculation for under 5-year-olds. And yet in the whole country, there's not 500 dead.
So now, if you go to Global COVID Summit, they've just issued a pediatric declaration in strong opposition to this.
Wonderful. I just don't know that anybody has the actual numbers. I keep hearing percentages, and I keep hearing declarative statements that don't have the number. All right, there's two numbers that matter. Two numbers. One is how many school-age children have died in the United States between 5 and 17. The other number that matters right now is how many children under 5 years old have died with COVID. The purpose of the inoculation, the root cause, the reason for having it, is to prevent
children from dying. Well, if fewer children have died in the last 2.5 years from COVID, under 5 years old, than from drowning, is this a medical emergency? The number, let me give you both numbers, because to me, everything, again, I have Asperger's, so everything else to me just sounds like blah, 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 when I have the number. How many children under 5 years old have died with COVID? That we're going to go inoculate 20 million of them? The number's 422 today. 422 children under 5 years old have died in the United States with COVID. The number of school children between 5 and 17 is 644. In both cases, more children that age group died from drowning in the last 2.5 years. So from my perspective, an emergency doesn't exist because of these numbers. Now, if you told me 2.5 million school-age children had died, I might feel differently. That's why the numbers are important. You have to put it in perspective for people so that they understand of the million people that died with COVID, 422 were 5 years older, younger, and yet you want to inoculate 20 million of them? That's the part where the logic falls apart. That's the part where the science isn't there. And
but
anything
Greg,
other
great.
Than that argument to me is kind of, I don't understand, quite frankly.
Well, let's see if we can make sense of it. You all can jump right into the conversation. We got about half an hour left, so let's feel free to get everybody to speak. Is that Molly?
Yeah. So the infuriating thing about this is the data on any of these arguments that the doctors are making, we win on the data a million fold. It's not a data problem if you're looking at actual, true, calculated data. The problem is they're ignoring the data, and that's the extremely frustrating part for us because we're talking until we're blue in the face and we're trying to say what we're seeing in the clinic on the street. And
I disagree with you. I respectfully disagree with you because, respectfully, no one on this call knew that number before I said it. All right, so yes, all of the reactions to the vaccine that we're talking about that are bad are bad. We're all in agreement about that. The question to the people that want to vaccinate the children is why? What is the goal of doing it? To prevent them from dying? How many have died?
There's another problem.
To me, it's
so
fundamental.
Yeah, no, and there's not, and actually I agree with me. There's a lot of other numbers. There's a lot of information people have. They all have some kind of figures in their head. Oh, they may not have the specific one for this. But most people do what they do because of COVID, because they're forced to. They're going to lose their job. Their kid can't go to school. They can't fly in the military. There's the reasons that people do these things. They won't get their pension. There's a million reasons out there. Most of this is based on coercion. So if you want to come up with a number, I'd like to know the percentage of people that voluntarily took the COVID, you know, jab because they just thought it was a wonderful thing. And how many people were coerced, extorted, forced, terrorized, propagandized, psychologically abused?
Right.
There's
because
the
they
number
didn't
I
have
want.
Facts.
Okay.
Right. And to me, that's all predicated on not
that
having the
battery
numbers.
Over the shot.
Who's that, Brian?
Tom.
Who's speaking just now? Tom, go ahead. Go for it, Tom.
Yeah, at what point are parents going to start getting charged with medical battery after forcing their kids to take this shot and they have an adverse reaction? That's another aspect of it. No one's really brought that up in the mainstream media or anything, but I remember seeing a post a few months ago about a parent gave her kid a COVID shot 5 or 6 years old and he's in the hospital, and the post under it was, oh, thank God he was vaccinated against COVID, otherwise this could have been worse. But I see once these things for 5 and under roll out, and I mean, it's already starting to come off the rails with kids. Like, quite frankly, I think no one should be getting this no matter what their age group is, but we're already seeing the adverse reactions now in kids, and I think that's going to go up.
Well, let's start closing the public schools. I don't see any use for government schools anymore. I think they've long outlived their usefulness. Let's really get to the core solutions here. You do that, people start homeschooling, you have a voucher system, you have a school choice, tax credits, tax deductions for educational expenses, things like that. That's a totally different ballgame. And how many kids are coming out of school right now anyway? How many parents are taking their kids out specifically so they don't get this jab? Anybody got numbers?
I know many service members homeschooling their kids right now.
Really?
As a result of this. Yes.
I believe it. Yeah. Okay. So half an hour left, folks. Just feel free to leap right in. Anybody got some more solutions? You know mine, citizen legislation. Who else has some ideas that, actions that we can
take?
One
thing that I find fascinating about this whole thing, I was out in the Middle East for a year and a half, spent quite a few trips to Djibouti, Africa, but they would kind of, going back to some of the stuff Dr. Judy said, but we had to hurry up and go to the clinic before we flew to Djibouti, East Africa, and pick up these 30-day pills of malaria meds. They're anti-malarial pills. You had to take them. They're an antibiotic.
And what were they?
They turn your anti-malarial pills. I can't think of the name of them.
What was
hydroxychloroquine? Hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, there was the 30-day supply and the 10-day supply, but I would always go to the corpsman who was prescribing them and say, hey, I'd really like the 10-day supply because you don't want your guts turning to jello for 30 days. But they would insist on giving you the 30-day supply, and, you'd have to take these pills for 30 days when you got there and when you left. And I find it interesting now they want to give us these pills prior to going to these countries that are antibiotics, like known and proven antibiotics, but nobody wants to prescribe anything to prevent COVID, to treat COVID in the military. They just want to send you home for 2 weeks and then tell you to go to Ascension Sacred Heart Emergency Room, who's firing all their doctors and nurses to go get treated there.
Yeah, well, let's get my favorite conspiracy person, Deborah Viglione, back on the line here, because this seems to me the most massive conspiracy that I have ever seen. They went about, and we talked about this last week, the 2007 pandemic guidelines. I don't know if anybody has had a chance to look at those, but the pandemic severity index and the fact that you couldn't even begin lockdowns until you were Category 4, which is upwards of 1.8 million dead, and the real lockdown started above that in a Category 5 pandemic. All that was done away with the first 3 months of the Trump administration. So that was my proof that this has all been arranged. Then Judy, of course, I learned about her and everything else she was talking about. So this is pretty plainly obvious. But the conspiracy, think of all the work that's gone into this. They've co-opted all the doctors. They've taken charge of the military. They've taken big tech, big pharma. There's advertising, news. The entire media has been co-opted. This is a major conspiracy to be able to do this. And for what? Just so that the people on top can make profits? Or just for a bioweapon, or both, or reduce the population, or control people, or see if mass psychosis really works? No. This took some serious planning to pull this off.
Kill the people you experimented on.
Go ahead, Judy.
Kill the people you experimented on, because think of the autism. It's a disease able to affect the economy of nations. These kids don't die, and they're not functioning members. Think of Alzheimer's. Think of our nursing homes filled with people who aren't serving society, who are, the victims of this. They're liable for this if the data in 2009 are true, like just in 2004, just as John Cullen is saying. If they planned all this, which they clearly did, I just sent you the email on that ZMAP to show you it was used as a trial for Ebola in 2015. All you have to do is Google search it, like Brian does all the time.
You guys send me stuff during the show. I'm busy, but I'll get to it.
So the goal is they were liable in 2011 when we proved it. You're liable for every injury, because when did all liability come back in the 1986 legislation? You're liable if you knew how to make a vaccine safer and you did not. Oops, we told them in 2009. You cannot use these monkey mouse gum aborted fetal cell lines. They're causing the disease. They satisfied Hill criteria for causation in every case, and the vaccine court is loaded with the data that proved that. So they had to kill them, cremate them, reduce it to base pairs so you don't know these variants were in you all along. And then they activate them with the snake venom poison toxins called COVID vaccines, because those aren't made in animal cell lines. And they say, oh, well, it's an experiment. So you're killing the people who already made antibodies, who've already been injected for decades and the virus is latent. You're activating the diseases and causing and killing them. And you're denying their God-given immunity.
They tipped their hand, Dr. Judy. I have a tweet that I sent out in January on Twitter. I just retweeted it. And Dr. Artis, I just followed you, So I don't know if you can see this tweet I retweeted, but this is from Novavax. And Novavax has been in the news recently. And I was able to download their slide presentation. They have a PowerPoint presentation about how their vaccine was designed. And on slide number one, the first slide, this is NVX-CoV-2373 vaccine design is the slide I'm reading from Novavax. And the first step is that the SARS-CoV-2 spike gene is inserted into an insect virus. Now, call me old-fashioned, but, I mean, Dr. Judy's just been warning us about monkey brains and monkey kidneys and, you know, the dog stuff and all that, and it sounds like they've been listening, so they've moved to wasps. This is not comforting.
And they didn't move there. They've been doing it all along. I showed in my talks that they've been doing it in insects. Remember, in PlandemicSeries.com and in Science Journal, they promised you flying syringes. That's what Zika was. They used a little mosquito program where they weaponized it over in Brazil. So we'll activate latent Zika, which is endemic all there, doesn't hurt a soul, and we'll do the Zika game. But it didn't grow here except in the tip of Hawaii, so you have a little problem when the idiot CDC, those mosquitoes don't survive here. You know, all of this we've documented, and this is the royal we, principally childrenshealthdefense.org and Dell Bigtree with the Informed Consent Action Network, the movie Vax, the movie 1986theact.com, the movie Vax 2, you know, all of these books, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, on and on, Dr. David Lewis, Science for Sale and the Corruption in the EPA. They've literally done this for years, and the problem with the liability, it's trillions of dollars. They can't afford the 10% they injured, so they're going to kill the people they experimented on when there is no liability with a shot that's with shots, not a shot, because every booster is going to now optimize to the part of the immune system they missed before. So as long as you're alive, and it's more, Greg, than your, I love your little commercial there, but it's more than that. Never get another shot. Our experiments, none have been tested, and you will die when you get that flu shot. That's what Luc Montagnier said. He didn't say the COVID shot. And he didn't say it in May of 21. He said it in the fall of 20. The paper came out from the military, from a guy named Wolf, January 2020. Oops, 2017 through 19 flu season. We're still talking about the problem with Trump that he should have stopped and Fauci tried to create. Everything John said is perfectly true.
4,000 a week dying every week.
I want to hold you up through that. We've only got a little over 20 minutes left. I want to bring some of the folks in that haven't spoken as much. So don't be shy, folks. You got to jump in. This is an active group. But we got to get solutions. Okay. And I believe the solution, and this is why I wanted Molly to talk about that bill, because you can change things. Okay. You can write bills. You can get them into office. But what we really need to do is mobilize everybody on this panel to mobilize all the other people, the doctors that are out there, you know, the media people that we know, everybody else, and start introducing a couple of really simple, straightforward bills and saying, we need these. We need these right now. You know, we've got a midterm election coming up. You know, you want people running like we have with Jerome Bell, for example, Navy chief. All right. He's running on citizen legislation that we wrote on this show. So I know it can be done. But we need to make, you know, leaps, big leaps, really fast. And all of you, like I say, who are sharing the show is growing. That's great. But that's a byproduct of what's really needed, which is to educate people that they can make a difference, that they can write the laws, or they can, well, not write laws, but they can support them, they can share them, they can talk about them with their friends, they can say this is possible. No one thinks that vaccine liability, product liability is possible right now. They don't think it's possible because they don't know if there's a bill that makes it possible. Okay, we've already got that bill. It's ready to go. All it has to do is be put in the legislature and have people behind it and say, we want product liability back on vaccine makers. It's there. It's been done. This is my frustration, is to get it out there. So we need to get, shift gears and go into, you know, action mode. We know what the problems are. We really do. And God love you all. You know, I love hearing about every last little bit of biochemistry that I don't know. It's fascinating. But we need to shift into active mode. And I absolutely believe that. Deborah, you still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Do you want to leap in here? And then I'm going to go to Molly and then Tom and then Jim and then Brian.
get into conspiracy. You want me to go out there?
Oh, please do. You're my
new
favorite.
Question. Now, this is going to get weird on you, but the biggest question.
Not
on
my show.
Why? 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 You know, why are they doing this? What is the benefit? It can't be just money. They have, they're loaded. It can't just be power. You know, they already have power. Who are they answering to? You know, this is definitely an anti-God, anti-our creator agenda. They're destroying the human race that was made in the image of God. They're trying to alter our DNA. They want to change our atmospheric CO2. They want to make us transhuman with a reptile species. You know, who are they answering to? Is it a demon? Is it Satan? Could it be an alien? I mean, if you want to get out there, they're answering to somebody. They have no concern about wiping us out as a species, which they should, because they can't control this stuff once it gets out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do they think it's not going to affect them? Why is it not going to wipe them out? They're answering to somebody.
Okay, and what do you think? Well, who do you think they're answering to?
I know it's demonic. I can tell you it's demonic. Now, I do entertain the possibility of aliens, but I think that they would be a demonic species. But they're answering to somebody.
Well, you know, humans can be indescribably evil. You know, look at wars. Look at gas in the trenches of World War One. Look at the Holocaust. Look at the killing fields of Cambodia. People can be insanely cruel and not think about it. So I don't think, I think it's very much an earthly thing, or it could be demonic, but I'd be curious about that. Let me see. We haven't heard from Jim Thorpe for a while, and then let's get to Molly and Jim. Go ahead.
Okay. So if
the question
God
is
the author of life, is it possible that God signed every single cell in your body with his signature and imprint? If God signed every single strand of DNA with his signature as the author of life, then how do you think God would react to an experimental gene therapy that corrupts or erases his signature? There's a Dr. Yeshayahu Rubinstein, who is he's both a rabbi, and he's he's an excellent researcher. And I'd be interested in your take on this, Judy.
Who's?
He explains that there's two polynucleotide helixes in the DNA together with a bridge of sulfur bridges. And the DNA base pairs alternate a sequence of 10, 5, and 6, 5. He alleges that the gematria of 10, 5, 6, 5 is YVHW. Yehovah, or Yahweh. Very interesting. So if this experimental gene therapy erases God's signature on our every single strand of DNA we have, how do you think he feels about that?
Great question.
Well,
we answer to God. That's the difference
that's,
with all of us here. As we answer to God, we do what we're supposed to do, which is to stop this. Judy, go ahead. Then I'm going to go around the panel.
Yeah. And,
I'm sorry.
And that's
go ahead.
What as far as the sulfurs, that's the work that I've been working with primarily. Stephanie Seneff and Carrie Madej has been talking about the signature. My point is, we are not our DNA all loose in our cell nuclei. We're our chromosomes protected by post-translational modifications. That 97% of our genome that wraps insulation around our DNA so nobody can get to it. So what God thinks is if we don't stop it, don't put poison on our skin, in our food, GMO, genetically modified anything in your life, then you'll be just fine. Everyone will. That's the solution. Stop. Turn away. Don't eat it. Don't ingest it. Don't inject it. Don't put it on your skin, and you'll be fine. Look at me. I worked with all of it. I made half the stuff, and I'm fine. But I use all of these things. And as for ivermectin, it's the purines or the base pairs that make up your DNA called adenine and guanine, your RNA, AG, ATP energy. If your doctors don't know ivermectin and thermointerferonergic modulators, they shouldn't be doctors and they should be fired. Nobody should have to prove it. It's not a horse pill. It's ridiculous.
Question. Should we be going after the boards that certify doctors? Have they outlived their usefulness?
Yes.
Jim,
yes.
We got to work on a bill.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
Well,
we need to go
let's,
away.
Let's start working on that. Molly, let's get a statement from you here. We got about 15 minutes left.
So if we're looking for solutions, I'm a little bit more simple. Number one, find a doctor who's independent and support them and stop doing business with corporate medicine because you're just voting with your dollars and continue to feed that system. Number two, I'm trying to build hospitals. I need a hospital so we can take care of people. We need to get out of the Medicare, Medicaid, federal funding to get out of the corruption. So we're looking for investors and builders to do that, and there's several groups around the country working on that. So I'm for the concrete solutions. Take good care of your health. If you've got health issues, get working on them. And, you know, check your vitamin D level. Make sure your blood sugars are okay. Work on healthy weight, being active. Whatever it is, this is your shot to get that resolved.
Yeah, I need to have you on for an hour. In fact, I want everybody gets their own hour at some point, but I want to have you on to talk about that I think the alternative is the alternative. In other words, another health system, a COVID-free health system, a vax-free health system, a separate blood supply system, a system of people not bound by, you know, some of these ridiculous restrictions and board certifications, but still people will go. I don't know how to do that. We're going to have to change some laws here, but I think we have the power with our citizen legislature to do that. So I need to talk to you a whole lot more. This is going to be interesting. Brian, let's get you back. I haven't heard from you for a bit. Unmute. Come on back in. Wake up.
Oh, I'm in. Thank you.
I know. I'm just teasing you.
Well, I appreciate everything and everyone said. Molly James, you're phenomenal. Proud of you. And as far as conspiracy, I'll just throw this out there. Dr. David Martin.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a great job of putting together a whole list of people and corporations that can be prosecuted for orchestrating this whole pandemic. And I actually called him the day before I filmed the interview with Stu Peters. I called him because of my concerns of a couple companies, and Judy knows what those are. But when I called him to ask him about a guy named Andrew Hoffman, who's actually the vice chairman of Hollande Roche, I said, I have a problem with this guy. Why are you picking the guy who is the vice president and not, or vice chairman? Why aren't you picking the chairman of the company? And he said, he's the financier for this entire pandemic. He's the money man. And then told me that, and I asked him, I said, well, what about Club of Rome that he's a member of? And I just want you to know, he said he was invited to be a member of that club. It's 100 people or so of the richest, most corrupt people on the planet. And it's been around since the 60s, and that's
I know them. I read their book.
They work.
They had the Club of Rome, the population model growth, whatever it's called. I know them.
Yeah, he told me that they actually worship a god called Mithra, and that she's an Iranian sun god, and if you look at old statues, it's like a very ancient pagan religion. And he said that's
pagan,
the reason why he couldn't join the group. And they actually, if you look at the statues of Mithra, it's a female god, but she's wrapped with this huge old serpent. Statue of her is wrapped
I was
with
waiting for the
serpent.
Snake. I knew the snake was coming. Okay, all right, yeah.
And I just want you to know that while talking to him, he goes, look at Mithraism. He goes, these are the people that are behind this entire thing. They are also the ones that created the climate change narrative in the 60s. They came up with this whole thing that humans in the 60s were going to outuse all the resources on the planet, and we have to control the population. This all occurred in the 60s with the Club of Rome. But as I'm talking, I said, I've never even heard of this thing. And he goes, just look at information on Mithraism, and I want you to know something because this is crazy. There's a constellation that's important to the Mithraism religion and these pagans. They are very evil human beings, I believe. They actually put up constellations and worship these constellations that represent the legends of Mithra and the gods he destroyed or beat, like in Greek mythology. And as I'm listening to Dr. David Martin, I looked up one of the constellations, and it's called Dracos, D-R-A-C-O-S, which means dragon. And in the dragon constellation, you have to know this just blew my mind. As I'm listening to Dr. David Martin, I'm looking at this constellation, and I'm going through every star named in the constellation. They are every single variant of COVID-19 by name. the Omicron star, the Delta star, the Mu star, the Alpha, Beta. That's how they're selecting the variants. I was like, oh, my God, they actually didn't go in order of the Greek alphabet. They're going in order of the stars and the serpents.
That's why they skipped
or
around.
Or the Draco constellation, which was
okay.
Pretty disturbing.
Brian, guess what I want? Well, Deborah asked the question. I want to pick this up next week. Who do these people answer to? I want to explore these things because we really outlined in the first 3 weeks, including today, we really outlined the problem. We really know. And if folks, you know, if they want to catch up to us, then they're going to have to start over and just catch up with the programs. But I really want to start, this is the kind of stuff I want to get into. I've heard of the Club of Rome. I had, you know, my Marxist socialist, you know, feminist mother insisted that I read it when I was like 11 or whatever it was, you know. So I was fully indoctrinated, you know, by the time I got out of college. And then I went to Europe, you know, sat in the Fulda Gap, you know, with an Armenian intelligence officer who was nice enough to meet on my Europe excursion. And he showed me that where the tanks were going to come through. It's really quite fascinating. Speaking of which, let's get to but I want to pick this. I want to pick up the Club of Rome. I want to talk about all these groups. I want to find out, you know, who are the Bilderbergers and who do they answer to. Deborah's asked the question for the next show, and I think we really need to pursue this because once we find out who's really behind this and who they really answer to, we can find out how to defeat them, and that is fully my intention. Captain Tom, you're our guest today, and outside of our medical profession folks here, but who does the military answer to? I mean, the real person or the real group. Who do they answer to?
As far as right now, the military is answering to the Secretary of Defense, and that's the one who's imposing this mandate and not wavering at all.
He answer to? Who does he answer to?
I think at the end of this, he'll be answering to the American people, to be quite blunt with you.
Okay, well, that's good. No, that, but I think – but is he – does he have UN connections? Does he have Club of Rome connections? Does he have – we know he's got mass interest in big pharma. He's got all kinds of stocks and things like that. So does he answer to investors? Does he answer – who does he answer to? Does he serve on any corporate boards, for example, as well as being Secretary of Defense?
I know he was very big for Raytheon, but I think his investments, after those are investigated, will answer a lot of the questions.
And how was he able to make those investments? Was he independently wealthy? I mean, I'm kind of curious now. You know, this is the kind of stuff I can do. Where did he get his money to invest?
Great question.
Okay.
I think there's going to be a lot of digging into it. As
feel free to check back with
us.
You know, I mean, like I say, now that you're part of our group now, so feel free to just join in. All right. Who has a John? Who do they answer to?
The answer to the... As far as the conspiracy and who's behind it?
Sure. I mean, feel free to speculate. This is half the fun of this show, is that we go.
So, the speculating part, who knows? But I'm not much of a conspiracy guy, but when you look at this kind of thing, there's a couple of vectors, one of which Dr. Judy and I have talked about on my show, which is the work of Dr. Fauci, Francis Collins, Jeffrey Taubenberger, and Reed, which was this resurrection of the deadliest virus known to man, the H1N1 Spanish flu version. They call it reconstructed pandemic influenza. Mm-hmm. So first of all, that completes in 2005. They published the genome, which is, you know, in the public domain now. And then Trump wasn't supposed to win the election in 2016. They didn't think he was going to win. And George Soros, at one of the meetings, says that the problem's going to be taken care of in 2020. Mm-hmm. And then, as Dr. Judy pointed out, the week before Trump was inaugurated, so before he gets sworn in as president, 1 week before, mm-hmm. Fauci's speaking at Georgetown. And
right.
In his Georgetown speech, he predicts a surprise outbreak for the next administration. So the combination of George Soros feeling confident that this is going to happen, Dr. Fauci predicting an outbreak, and then the symptoms of the outbreak matching the virus that Fauci had in his hip pocket that, by the way, you can't test for it. There's no PCR test for reconstructed pandemic H1N1 influenza. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't know if it was out there unless you did cultures, and we stopped doing cultures. So I think they deployed this virus pandemic story to get Trump out of the White House because they knew they could move to mail-in voting, and they had a willing partner in China.
because if they can shut
Facebook.
Everything down
at Facebook with
well,
the money.
Yes, but importantly China. So the Chinese disinformation CIA operation over there makes everybody think it's way worse than it is, and today China has fewer people dead than North Carolina. So it's almost like it was a magic trick in that they showed you something to make you panic, and now in retrospect you look back and you go, what do you mean there's only 600 people dead in Shanghai? How's that possible? We stopped the whole planet because of what was happening in China, and today you're telling me there's not 20,000 people dead, there's twice as many people dead in Pennsylvania? That's
well, you know,
the part
my
that
theory.
We have to...
Yeah,
so I think that's kind of what they were at, and then all kinds of hell broke loose, all kinds of other things started to happen, and that's what I mean. It's a multi-act play. Once you get into the vaccines, you get a whole other group of people. Stefan Bancel wasn't part of what was happening in February of 2020.
Who's that real quick?
Right, so February, March of 2020, Stefan Bancel, the CEO of Moderna, he hadn't been introduced to the audience yet. He wasn't a player in this yet. Right, he had something up his sleeve, but there was a whole lot going on before the vaccine showed up that reeks of subterfuge. Reeks of subterfuge.
Well,
one of those things is the disappearance of influenza globally. Influenza disappears from the WHO's tracking system everywhere on Earth in a 3-week period, weeks 11 through 14 of 2020, and I documented that in a white paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are the, you know, conspiracy issues. You know who was behind
it?
Michael Bloomberg.
Two people plot to do evil. So and it's a theory. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, let's go for it. I have no problem with conspiracies or theories. I have a favorite though.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite is that the one part of this that no one seems to be talking about except me is the change in the pandemic guidelines. The 2007 interim guidelines with the pandemic severity index, the various categories, the executive summary that talks about reducing the impact on society, economy, you know, should there be a pandemic, and the 2017 guidelines that were passed 3 months after Trump took office, April 21st of 2017. So Dr. Fascist gives his announcement a week before the inauguration of Donald Trump, and 3 months later they changed the guidelines. I'll bet you Trump never even knew that those guidelines were changed. I want to know if there's something that you get from the data that shows why they did that, how they got rid of the pandemic severity index. Is there a paper trail of some kind? You know, how did this
Dr.
get through?
Judy and I, yeah, Dr. Judy and I will tell you about this next week.
Sounds
but
good.
A lot of it has to do with these new definitions in the 2009 H1N1 outbreak, in which only 12,000 people died. So they changed the rules. Then you had a global pandemic declared in 2009 with H1N1 called the swine flu, but only 12,000 Americans died, supposedly. All right, so Dr. Judy and I, next week, we should talk about the influenza burden document and the crazy calculations that they go through to tell people what influenza burden is, because it's sure not how many people died of influenza.
Well, let's go to Judy then. We've got about 2 minutes left, and I want to thank everybody. We will convene next week, but I want to give it to the captain here, Dr. Judy Mikovits, to sort of sum it all up and see where you want to take this next week. I think we're right on a bunch of stuff, what John said, what Deborah said about asking the question, everything else everybody has said. Judy?
And what fabulous Molly's doing, and yeah, everybody. So we need to talk about the influenza burden, because that 2009 vaccine severely injured a lot of kids, a lot of college students, a lot of young kids. And so now they're set up, as I've been saying, you know, to die from this flu shot. Same thing with Gardasil. So they're giving these things together. So these shots set you up by how they're combining things. And again, the changing of the rules, you know, they changed the rules. 2009 was a big year, and you have to look at what went down to change in 2011, the Brucewicz decision and vaccine court that essentially made it null and void, because in 2009 they were liable for all this. It's really about money, destroying the evidence, killing everybody. That's a drain on our economy and the preservation of favored races. This is very much against, you know, God, and they are the God. This is what we're doing in this Crimes Against Humanity task force, and we're going to Florida next week, so I might be flying there. I haven't made that plane ticket yet. I've got to get in there on the 16th, so I'll hopefully work it around getting on the show or from an airport. But this is the whole thing. The years really matter. This is Satan. This is against God, and we're supposed to worship, you know, basically Scientism, Tony Fauci, the cult of science. As Molly said, this has nothing to do with science. It's a plague of corruption. It's been that way. It's take over our country. It's take over our world. And in the transhumanism, this is Patrick Wood speaking on our task force all about the scientism, which started, you know, hundreds of years ago, but in our lifetime, 1980.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, only because that's the only reason I have to hold you up. Otherwise, I'd be glad to talk about this. All right, you're all invited back next week. We have a lot of work to do in the meantime. And so let me just say thank you all so much. This is incredible. And let's see what we can accomplish, you know, for positive action for next week. And I want to recommend everybody go to writeyourlaws.com. That's our legislative website here at Action Radio, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. Go to the legislation part on the menu bar, click on that, and then you look down, you'll see all proposed laws. Those are the ones that need the endorsements. Those are the ones that need sharing. That's where you're going to find the product liability for vaccine makers, Dr. Solenko's bill on EUAs, my bill on fixing big tech censorship, and probably Monley's bill on creating a new health system. We'll get that one in there, too, as soon as we write it. Thank you all. Let's do it again next week.
Thank you.